I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSD Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG. Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
You're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello. You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being it.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative. Excuse me, we don't make excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, the Real Guys Talk Real Sports, RSG, Renegade Radio. You are now in tune to the resistance. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer, one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. To my right, I got my man D. Wills. Holler at the people.
You know, I got my high socks on. I'm ready for the Final Four. I'm just looking to set up in the corner and deliver all night. That's what I'm going to do tonight. I'm just going to set up in the corner and deliver all night.
All right. I'm going to do my driving dish. We got it all set up. We got a great show planned for you tonight, as we always do. Again, Renegade Radio, RSG is what you're listening to right now. Tonight's show, we have interviews with Lewis Preston, coach at Kennesaw State. We have Samika Randall of Tennessee fame, former Lady Vol, who is now the head coach at Ohio University with the women's program there. We also have Pierre Orser, the head coach of Colorado College of the Mines. He'll be joining us again tonight to talk about the Division II championship and Final Four. So we have some coaches checking in. We're going to talk a lot of college hoops, get into the both women's and men's Final Four tonight. We're going to talk a little Tebow. You may be Tebowed out, but you haven't got the RSG version of the Tebow situation, which is always very, very different than what you're hearing on the national radio stations or the national sports talk. So we're going to bring that to you. We're also going to talk about the Saints situation with Sean Payton being suspended for a year. Those suspensions came down this week. Goodell laid it on him, didn't he, D-Wills?
He put it out there on him. You know, that's sending a message for the next 10 years. So, yeah, he put it on him.
Yeah, real harsh penalties coming down. Not only the loss of draft picks, but you lose your head coach for a year. Sean Payton doesn't get any pay with a team that was planning on contending for a Super Bowl. You know, you got one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and that's the key ingredient is having one of the top quarterbacks, and they're doing Drew Brees. So they're really going to try and figure out how to piecemeal together a coaching situation that will allow them to be successful over the course of the season, given they won't have their head guy. That's a real interesting situation. We'll get into that more tonight as well. Tiger Woods. Brother Tiger, finally, I had to get my Joe Peoples in there real quick. I had to throw that Joe Peoples in there. You know, so Tiger Woods finally got another win. You know, finally stepped his game up. and is playing good golf as he gets ready to head into the Masters. So we'll touch base with that a little bit. There's a lot going on. The NBA season is winding down. Some teams are struggling. You got the Heat kind of losing a few games here and there. We may touch base on the Knicks a little bit, talk about what's not working and what's working there. And then also there's a little trouble in Live City. So we got a lot to get into. We're going to go ahead and get it started. PhD, where you at, homie?
Fellas, I'm here. I'm ready to have a slamming show. Our first guest is Coach Lewis Preston from Kennesaw State. He's the head basketball coach there. This is a gentleman I've been following his career since he was a player. I won't say exactly how long ago, but a few years ago at VMI. Coach is one of the highest sought-after assistants a couple of years ago. He's had stops at Penn State, Notre Dame, and was even part of a championship team for the Florida Gators back in 07 as an assistant. And again, currently he is the head coach at Kennesaw State. So let's bring in Coach Lewis Preston. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing great, Phil. Devon, how you guys doing?
We're doing well, Coach.
We're doing good, Coach. We're looking forward to chatting with you. So let's just dive right in. So, Coach, you know, you guys had a tough season, but one of the things I think you could probably take away is the tough schedule that you guys had. You guys played against five teams that was in the NCAA tournament, including the likes of Wisconsin, Ohio, and Missouri. How did this tough schedule help prepare your program for the future?
Well, I think the first thing, Phil, what it does is, you know, especially for us, I think it gives you a chance to go out and recruit young men and try to tell them that you're going to go out and play a tougher schedule, going to give them a chance to play in some great arenas, some great venues. So you got to make sure that you prepare them and you use the tough schedule to prepare them for the conference schedule and things of that nature. And the next thing is you give a chance for some young guys to step up and have an opportunity to play right away in some hostile environments to help prepare them as they mature and grow as basketball players.
Coach, in a recent interview, you mentioned that Markeith Cummings, Aaron Anderson, and Delbert Love, who's actually a freshman, you described them as a rock-solid foundation for your program to move forward. Talk a little bit about these returning players and what they've contributed to your program so far.
Well, first of all, I'm going to start with Markeith Cummings, who was second-team All-ASUN this year. You know, I think he has the potential to really take that next step next year. It's going to be a lot of hard work for him. It's not going to be easy because one of the things is that he's so well-known throughout the conference. They know his strengths and his weaknesses. So this is going to have, for him, this is going to have to be the biggest year of his entire career. And he's been working hard this spring. And the summer and next fall is going to be very important leading up into his senior year. Moving forward to Aaron Anderson, Aaron really exceeded my expectations this year. He led the league in rebounding at about 9.1 a game, was just right under 10 points a game. And one of the things I looked at him is to take and build on this past season for next season and average a double-double. And last but not least, Delbert Love, who was the lone freshman that I brought in this year, what was really exciting about him was to watch him grow and develop throughout the course of the year. I actually played him out of position at point guard, and he's really a combo guard. So for him to step up, and he led all the freshmen this year in the eighth on and scoring overall, and he was a unanimous choice for the all-freshman team. So those three guys, you know, set and represent a great, solid foundation for us in preparation for next season. And the young men that we have coming in the fall of 2012 is going to be very important as we continue to grow and build this program.
Coach, I read an interesting story about Aaron Anderson you just mentioned, and pretty much it said that you sat down with Aaron before the season started, and this young man rededicated himself to become a better ball player. And one of the points that he made is, you know, he wanted to lead the conference in rebounding. Talk a little bit about that conversation and development of this young man.
Well, I think a lot of it has to go back to Aaron. I think one of the things that you know, that I love about him is what you see is what you get. There's no fluff. There's no flair to him. He's just going to go out and play hard, give you everything that he has. And, you know, he wants to go out there and he sets his mind to something and, you know, he goes out and accomplishes it. And I think one of the great things for him is that his girlfriend was actually the starting point guard for the women's team. So I think there was a little, you know, competitive fire between those two. But, you know, Aaron sat down from day one and, you know, he put down his goals on a piece of paper and he pretty much lived up to those expectations. And in my mind, he exceeded those. So I'm very happy and proud of him. But like I told him at the end of the year, we got a lot more work to, you know, to get done and to accomplish.
Now, Coach, taking a step back here, but also talking a little bit about Markieff that you just briefly brought up, I had the opportunity, the pleasure of watching your team play early in the season against Missouri State. And again, you know, Missouri State was predicted to win their conference or be second. They had the reigning player of the year, Kyle Weems, on their team. And that whole second half, it was obvious that I was watching two NBA caliber type of players with Weems and Cummings going back and forth. Can you talk a little bit about Markieff Cummings' game and even in particular that matchup between he and Weems?
Well, I could describe Markieff as that I haven't seen too many players that's as naturally God-given athletic as he is. He is a freakish athlete in regards to his body being, you know, at about 6'6" at about 230. I think one of the things as the season wore on and the minutes started to mount a little bit, you know, I think he, you know, may have broken down a little bit as the season went on. But I think one of the things moving forward in regards to him, and you going back to that Missouri State game against Weems, was you saw two players that were, you know, athletic. One in Weems was more of a perimeter scorer and was able to do a variety of different things. I look at Markieff right now as more of a mid-range, 15 feet and in guy. And, you know, we're going to have to expand his range here in the offseason. But more importantly, he's going to have to understand that he can go down into the low block or maybe a step off the low block and face up or even went back to the basket moves and take over a game. And one of the things about him, I thought he did a very good job of that early on in the season, especially when we played Wisconsin and, you know, some of the bigger teams. But once we got into conference play, I think he had a tendency to roam out of the perimeter a little bit too much. So those are some things we've talked about. We're going to continue to work on and get him better.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys at realsportsguys.com. We're talking live to Lewis Preston, the head coach of the Kennesaw State Owls. Coach, you and your staff have been extremely busy on the recruiting trail, and you guys have bared some fruit. Right now, you guys have four players signed for next year, including an All-Stater out of Ohio and Miles Hamilton, as well as one of the best players in the Atlanta area and Yanell Brown. Plus, you got two kids out of Florida who are highly regarded. Talk a little bit about your recruiting class coming in for next year.
Well, I'll start with Yanell Brown, who was just recently named second-team All-State 5A. You know, he's going to be the straw that kind of, you know, stirs the drink for us. Point guard, he is a pass, first pass, second guard that does have the ability to shoot. You know, guys really enjoy playing with him, and the main reason why they love playing with him because he does give them the ball. Has great vision. Very unselfish, and, you know, as a head coach, your point guard, like a quarterback in football, you know, you're kind of judged off of that position. So for him, I think it's going to be a great opportunity for him to come in, learn, grow. I think Delbert's going to be a big asset for him. And moving forward, I look for him to, you know, be a very, very valuable part of our team here starting in early June. Moving on to Miles Hamilton, who was also second-team All-State in Ohio. He just recently lost in the Final Four to state semifinals in Columbus this past weekend. Love him. He is fearless. He is a competitor, plays with great fire, great energy, and he's going to bring a toughness and a never-say-die mentality that's much needed with our team. And one of the underrated things about him is his ability to shoot the ball, but he can score in a variety of ways, whether it's driving to the basket, knocking down the mid-range shot, even being able to shoot the three, and also getting to the free throw line. But his fire and his passion is something that's going to resonate throughout our team. And the other two gentlemen you were talking about, Jordan Montgomery happened to win the 2A state championship this past year at Orlando Christian Prep. He's a phenomenal defender, driver slasher to the basket, very underrated as a shooter, but can knock down shots. So I'm very excited about him. And last but not least, Brandon Williams, who actually won the state championship last year, his junior year, had a great senior year, averaging a double-double, 6'8", about 215, 220. He's going to come in and give us some much-needed help inside as we continue to grow and blossom.
Now, Coach, before I send this to Devon for a quick question, you know, one of the things I've noticed, you guys, your recruiting class is all over the place, Ohio, Florida, Georgia. You guys are located in the greater Atlanta area. Can you talk a little bit about your recruiting philosophy and how you've been so successful bringing in quality players from all over the Midwest and South?
Well, I think the best thing about recruiting here to Kennesaw State is that you have the best of both worlds. You're about 25 minutes away from a beautiful, vibrant metropolitan city in Atlanta, but you're also in a college campus setting and atmosphere. We have right at about 25,000 students overall. You know, we have over 70 undergraduate degree programs, and we'll continue to grow. Our College of Business is one of the top, 25 business schools in the country, and is continuing to grow and blossom and get better. And, one of the things that I like to sell our potential student athletes on is two things: the opportunity to come in and play right away, and to help do something that hasn't been done here at Kennesaw State at the Division I level, and that's win championships. So I think we have a great foundation with the three, the three young men that I talked about. I think with the gentleman that we have coming in here, that's coming in the summer of 2012, we're going to help to continue to build on that. And as we move forward towards the future, we plan on hanging banners here at Kennesaw State.
Coach, this is Devon, and we certainly love having you on. I want to continue down this line of thinking. I mean, you've had a chance to work at, and as Phil talked about in the intro, with some really great programs. What have you taken from those experiences that are helping to define your program at Kennesaw State?
Well, let me start with the first guy that I ever worked with, one of my best friends and a great mentor to me, Pete Strickland at Coastal Carolina. He always told me that this is a profession and not a business. And, enjoy this profession, but make sure that you take time out for your family as well. That's something that I'm trying to get a little bit better at each and every day. With Mike Bray, he was great with player-coach relationships, and his thing was to always tell me, don't get too high off of wins, don't get too low off of the losses, just try to stay even-keeled, because it'll kind of resonate onto your kids as well. So I try to pass that along and try to keep that in mind, each and every day. And believe me, with the year that we had this past year, I had to make sure that I, kept myself off the edge of the cliff, so to speak. But, but with Billy Donovan, it was like getting a PhD in X's and O's and having a chance to be a part of the second national championship coming up here 5 years ago. I think what was incredible about that was being able to handle success but still work hard and compete each and every day. And I still tell people to this day, what those kids at Florida did in games paled in comparison to what those guys were doing in practice. Because I'm telling you, practice was 10 times better, because you couldn't play that starting five together too much because they were just that good. So when you had Joakim Noah going against Al Horford, Corey Brewer going against, I felt bad for our freshman Dan Werner when he came in at the time, because, he was getting his lunch handed to him every day. you know, Torian Green, Lee Humphrey going up against each other, Chris Richard. I mean, that was a very talented team from top to bottom, and they did a great job of handling success very well, but also keeping it in perspective. And, you know, last but not least, being at Penn State for 3 years, I really thought, you know, Coach DeChellis really helped put the, you know, the final pieces to the puzzle for me in preparation to become a head coach, just with his practice preparation and, you know, how much he got out of the kids. I really felt that my 3 years at Penn State, you know, my first year in 2009 when we won the NIT championship, and then this past year, I really thought we maximized our talent. And as a coach, when you can go back and look at your entire season, you can say that you've maximized, you know, a team's talent, you know, collectively. That's a great feeling. So, with each one of those coaches, I've learned something unique. I've had a chance to grow. But even more importantly, they all have been major parts of my success to get to this point. And I still call all of them, you know, very good friends and good mentors to me that I feel like I can call anytime and get advice from them.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We are thrilled and enjoyed to have the head coach of Kennesaw State, Coach Lewis Preston, with us. Now, Coach, you touched on your experience with the Florida Gators when you all won the 2007 National Championship, and you were part of that second year of that back-to-back. Coach, I'd be remiss without asking you, you know, talk to our listeners about the preparation that you went through, you know, at this point 4 or 5 years ago leading up to the Final Four, what Kentucky, Louisville, Kansas, and Ohio State is going through right now. Give our listeners a sneak peek of what that preparation is like.
Well, I think the biggest thing from a coaching perspective right now is to eliminate distraction. And what happens right now is, you know, I think the craziest thing is the allotment of tickets that, you know, that has to be, you know, passed out with family members, because you have every cousin, friend, great uncle, you know, who wants to come and be a part of it. So you've got to be, you know, you have to be very careful how you eliminate distractions and keep these kids focused, because, you know, for this group, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And, you know, what's unique about each one of these programs, you know, we played Ohio State, and Coach Motto was the coach at the time back in 2007. You know, they had a heck of a year. You know, they had some injuries. I remember Greg Oden was injured. And it just come back the first time that we had played them back in December of that year in 2007.
Right.
You know, for him to get back, and it's his first, you know, time back since that, you know, since 2007, I know he's going to cherish this a lot more. When you look at Kansas, you know, Bill Self won it in 2008. You know, for him to get back here in a year to where everybody thought it was a rebuilding process, I think that says a lot about him and his staff and the great job that they've done. You know, you look at Kentucky on paper from top to bottom, everybody has said it all year that they're, you know, either the best team or one of the top two teams in the nation, along with North Carolina at the time. So, you know, for Coach Calipari to be back here, it's his second Final Four in 3 years. I think that says a lot about the talent, you know, and the job that he's done. Last but not least, with Coach Pitino, you know, with the team that he has, with the injuries that he, you know, had throughout the course of the season, I don't think anyone had him, you know, as a potential participant, you know, in New Orleans. So I know for him, I know he's going to enjoy this probably more than any of his other experiences of being at the Final
Sure.
Four, you know, whether at Providence back in 87 or while he was at Kentucky. So, you know, for coaches right now, the biggest thing is to make sure that you eliminate distractions. You keep guys focused on doing the same things that's led you to this point. I think what's going to be the craziest part of it all is when they get down to New Orleans and you go and everybody gets together, when you get fitted for the rings and, you know, you receive your Final Four rings for being a Final Four participant. I think that's the first time it really hits you. And, you know, from that point forward, it kind of goes by in a blur. Also, for coaches, you're watching literally every film on the opponent throughout the course of the year to try to find one little thing that could be the difference in a game, because a lot of these games are going to come down to last possessions.
Mm-hmm. So you're listening to Real Sports Guys Radio at realsportsguys.com. We've got the head coach of the Kennesaw State Owls men's basketball program, Lewis Preston, on. Coach, before we let you go, we want to hear your analysis and breakdown of these two Final Four games. Let's start with Kentucky and Louisville. I've got some family in Kentucky right now, and they have drawn a line in the sand, Kentucky fans versus Louisville fans. Talk about this matchup and perhaps one key that each team needs to do to be successful in this game.
Well, when I look at, Kentucky and Louisville, you know, I think one of the things Louisville's got to do, they got to get back in transition. Because, I mean, if you go back and watch the Baylor game, Baylor's turnovers led to a lot of early, easy transition baskets for Kentucky, and I don't think Baylor was really able to recover from that. I can tell you right now, Coach Pitino's probably working on transition defense as we speak. But, I think one of the things that, because these two teams played each other earlier in the year, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting is the level of confidence that Louisville is playing with right now. And I think a lot of that comes back to being down 11 with about 5.5 minutes to go against Florida, and you come back and win that game. I think every team has to have a definable moment like that in order to win a championship. So, you know, I think transition defense for Louisville is going to be important. I think for Kentucky it's going to be, just kind of keeping their foot on the throttle, hoping that, you know, Anthony Davis is 100% after what happened to him, you know, in the game against Baylor on Sunday.
Sure.
And then at the end of the day, it just comes down to making shots. So, and, you know, as you move over to Ohio State and Kansas, I think the most intriguing matchup to me out of all of this is probably Sullinger and Thomas Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And, Thomas Robinson's been phenomenal all year. He's been consistent. He plays with the fire and the passion that you wish all college basketball players play with, and I think that's the reason why he's so unique. In regards to Sullinger, is he going to be able to get his shot off against Withy? And also a variety of different guys that Kansas is going to probably take and put on him. I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas double-teamed him, kind of threw some different things at him a little bit, to try to see if he can score. He's a very good passing big man out of the post. So, you know, I think they'll run some different things defensively. And I think, once again for Ohio State, it comes down to William Buford stepping up as a senior now, knocking down some shots. For them, and then, you know, Aaron Kraft being able to handle the pressure against Tashawn Taylor and Elijah Johnson.
Well said, Coach. Well said. Now you made a comment earlier about your brackets before you got on the air. On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you with the bracket that you filled out on NBC last week?
You know what? I actually just pulled one off for fun, and I'm at a -3.
It's hard.
Yeah, my bracket is a wreck right now. I actually had North Carolina to win it all, but also at the same time, you know, I had Kentucky. I actually had Kentucky, Florida State, North Carolina, and I forget who I had as the fourth one to win it or to be in the Final Four, and all that's left is Kentucky, so. For all those people who picked all four Final Four participants, I mean, that's a great job.
Hats off to them. Hats off to you. We've been talking to Lewis Preston, the head coach at Kennesaw State. Coach, we want to thank you for coming on. We expect big things from your program moving forward. That's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on. We really believe in you as a coach and building your program. And, again, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with the Real Sports Guys.
Well, thank you for having me, and continued success to you guys.
Thanks a lot, Coach. Back to Marcus, the game changer.
All right. Thanks, Coach Preston, for joining us. Coach Preston brought up some really good points about the tournament. We're going to talk about that for a second. Me and D-Wills are going to hold you down for a moment. Now, D-Wills, let's talk about the Final Four on the men's side real quick while we have an opportunity. A nice segue Coach provided us with. Let's go ahead and jump into that. We have Louisville and Kentucky, straight-out blood feud. Let's talk about that game for a moment. What are you, as you start to handicap that game, what are you seeing between those two teams? You have Kentucky, which is loaded with pro talent, a game changer in Anthony Davis, plus a kid like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who is just one of those glue guy types who does a little bit of everything, very special kid, very competitive kid, really loaded team in Kentucky. And then you have a team in Louisville that reminds me of last year's champion, UConn, a team that got hot, really hot towards the end of the season, picked up a lot of steam going into the tournament, and just kept the ball rolling. And that seems to be Louisville this year. So talk to me a little bit about that, about how you see that Louisville-Kentucky matchup playing out.
Well, I mean, first of all, I do want to acknowledge, Coach in terms of, first of all, he's building a great program, and I really enjoyed hearing just this philosophy. You can tell that this is someone that is a star in the coaching ranks in the making. I mean, just you can tell from the way he talks about his players and what he wants, and the reason why he's been successful in his recent recruiting effort. So I'm excited about where he's going to go. And I think I would continue along his line of his analysis in that what's interesting about this is that, yes, they met earlier in the year. But I think, you know, this is the kind of team in Louisville that Patino loves. Scrappy. They fight. They're going to have to maximize their potential to win. But then they run it into a buzzsaw. And one of the things that I think, and I said this early on, you know, we talked before the season, you know, who were going to be some folks that would, you know, be kind of some shine lights. And you talked about Gilchrist. I would watch. He is the glue. He seems to get important baskets, rebounds, deflections. It's kind of like stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheets. And I think this is what's different about this Calipari team, is that their strength is clearly in their willingness to play defense and their willingness to commit to getting after it. And I think every time you have a person like Davis, kind of like having Griner, when you have a difference maker in the middle that can just alter shots, it's like, you know, they allow you to make up for mistakes as long as you can stay out of foul trouble. I think that Kentucky, this is going to be a hard-fought game. It's going to come down the last 2-3 minutes in possession. It's just, that's the kind of game it is. It's going to come down to 2 or 3 possessions. But I think when it comes down to 2 or 3 possessions, that means you've got to get stops. And the best defensive player on the court is on Kentucky.
And that's the best player on the court is Anthony Davis. I think he's gonna really bring out a lot in that game. Now you started talking about Kennesaw State and what Coach is bringing to the table. While we go into that a little bit more, let's talk a little bit more about Kennesaw State. You know, Coach is really building something out there. He has a great place to recruit to. How do you see him continuing to develop that program over the next couple of years?
Well, I think the big thing is that I think he has the ability to go into living rooms. And Atlanta's a weird place in terms of it, because you can pull kids, I think the way he's pulling kids, you can pull a kid from Ohio because they might have family in Atlanta, right? You can pull, it's because it's a transplant area that people move there in a lot of different ways. It gives him a unique recruiting opportunity because somebody might be going away from home, but they might be going close to family. So I think he has that ability. But I think he can really leverage his experience of knowing what it looks like to be on top. And in that mode of kind of, you know, the fact that he knows what a winner looks like, and they know he knows that. He knows he's been around great players. And, you know, a lot of times kids want to be around folks that know how to develop players as well. They can give them opportunity to shine. So I just think that, I mean, if you just listen to him, you know, I was ready to lace him up. You know, I was ready to lace him up. And I think he has a charisma. He has a style. He knows what winning looks like. And I think if they just give him a shot to kind of to drill down. And he has the ability to tap into that right type of player. You know, in a couple of folks he talked about, you know, second team All-State, you know, they've been able to make runs in their state tournaments. You know, players who might just be a little bit under the radar, But know that they can get in and play early with him. He's going to play a style that they're going to like. So I just think he has so much going for him, and he's in the community, that when you're talking about what are you going to do after it's all said and done at the end of the day, you know, kids are going to be like, you know, it's a great place to live.
Yeah, Phil T., in your research at Kennesaw State, were there any interesting things that you saw about what Coach Preston is building out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I mentioned in the intro, Coach Preston has been a guy that I've followed since his days at VMI, and I think that military background he has will speak very well, as Devon mentioned, when he goes into living rooms to recruit. If you look at what he's done so far, bringing an all-stater out of Ohio, bring in two state champion level players out of Florida, and you know, this kid out of Garnett County is one of the best players in the Atlanta area, and this is just his, you know, first full time to recruit. This is his first shot out there since he got the job last year. So I like what they're doing. He mentioned that he's allowing kids to play early, and that's one of the benefits of building a program. Coach Nagy, who was on last week at South Dakota State, who just made their first trip to the tournament, he talked about that too. That's one of the benefits of recruiting at a mid-major, because every couple of years, when you're clearing out some of those seniors, you get a few additional freshmen who are able to come in, contribute right away, and that's certainly got to be a selling point come to the recruiting part of things. So like Devon mentioned, Coach Preston has a high level of charisma, and you know, just in preparation for this interview, his ethics and integrity also spilled out as well. And we don't hear that enough from college coaches and college recruiters. So I think Coach is going to do excellent. You know, one of the things we didn't mention is that Belmont, the team that has won that conference the majority of the last 5 to 7 years, they're actually leaving to the Ohio Valley Conference. So that Atlantic Sun will be wide open for the next couple of years for the take-in.
Well, hopefully that means that's smooth sailing for Coach Preston and the Kennesaw State Owls. We'll definitely be looking forward to him joining us again in the near future as he continues to build that program. See, we like to find those up-and-coming coaches and those up-and-coming programs on the Real Sports Guys and really highlight them and really kind of get them out there before they blow up. We like to get you in on a ground level or something. When we see something brewing, we see something bubbling, we got our ears to the street. So when we see something brewing, we feel something bubbling up, we're going to try and get our listeners out there in on the ground level so that you're aware of what's going on, you're aware of what's popping. You got your finger on the pulse of athletics, you know, the sports world. You know, so again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, RSG, Renegade Radio. Feel free to call in anytime if you want to get on with the Real Sports Guys, 1-347-989-0844. Touch base with us. We'll get you on when we can. We got a lot of guests coming up. We still have to get to Coach Samika Randall from Ohio University. She's going to be joining us shortly. And then we have Pryor Orser coming on later. In between that, we're going to do what we do, kick the barbershop talk like we always kick it. You know, we talked about the Final Four. We touched base on the one side of it with Louisville and Kentucky. On the other side of it, D-Wills, we got Kansas and Ohio State, who both threw a monkey wrench into our bracket. I'm going to be bracket guy for a moment and talk a little bit to y'all about my bracket. But they threw a tremendous monkey wrench in my bracket. I had Syracuse and North Carolina. Both teams suffered a hit, multiple hits. Carolina just wasn't quite themselves. And one thing with Carolina I want to talk to you about real quick. The enigma of Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes came in as the first high school player to be a preseason All-American. He was first-team All-American. And despite all the losses, you feel like a guy like that should be able to carry his thing through. Now, he may finish his college career without ever having gone to a Final Four as the first player ever to be named to a preseason All-American team before he ever played a game. With that said, it's not like he was at Akron or he was at, you know, a mid-major school. He's at a blue-blood traditional powerhouse, and he couldn't quite get it together. When you look at Harrison Barnes, you look at his game, where is he going in the future? Because he came in with Kobe comparisons. He's the next Kobe. He's the next great wing. He's the best high school ball player since LeBron. Well, I think with the exact words when he was coming out of high school. Where do you see Harrison Barnes next year if he's going to the NBA?
What I didn't see is the aggressiveness. You know, a lot of times, I mean, you know, you can tell he's highly talented, but I didn't see his team needed him to get to the free throw line. His team needed to have him in attack mode, and he just was uncertain. And that's what worried me. You were bringing that up, and I was thinking about it as I was watching him, and I'm thinking, what is wrong with him? I didn't see the aggressiveness. I didn't see – what I expected for him is that this cat is probably – now he gonna go for 25, 26. He might have a 30-point night because that's what it's going to take. Because there, at a certain point, a superstar has to realize that he has to give his team confidence. He has to signal to them that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we lost our point guard. Frankly, I'm the best player on the court. I can bring the ball up if I need to. And he didn't have that in him. And for me, that's what makes me nervous. You know, the person who reminds me of that just teased you coming out of college, it came out of the same thing, Carolina, as Marvin Williams. Like, everybody talked about how good he was, you know, was coming out of college. But in the pros, it's just like you want – somebody needs to get in there jump starting. It's like you got all this talent, but your execution of it and your willingness to get after it isn't there. You know, when I watched him play in his tournament, I was like, I feel like you need to come back one more year. And that's hard to say, but I watched him. I was thinking, you need to come back for your junior year. This is not the type of performance. It's fool's gold. Yeah, you're going to be drafted at a higher level, but this is really about how do you cultivate yourself as a leader. And this was an opportunity for him to become a leader, to step up. And I didn't see the aggressiveness. I think he had really good looks, but he wasn't aggressive. He was tentative.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to have to see how it unfolds with Mr. Barnes out in North Carolina, because that aggressiveness and that unwillingness to take over a game, if he's supposed to be a 1A kind of guy, really worries me. If he's supposed to be that guy you in as a 1A, really worries me. You know, but Carolina kind of does that to guys. Vince Carter didn't look like a stud coming out of Carolina either, which is why he fell to 5 in the draft. He didn't look quite like, you know, he was going to be what he was when he was healthy and motivated. When he was at Carolina, he had a lot of expectations coming in as well. Didn't quite live up to him in Carolina, but once he got into the pro game, it seemed that the freedom and the more ISO-based game in the pros seemed to help him out a little bit. So I just don't know what to make of him, man, because he came in with so much hype. But we'll have to see how he develops. I think he's a good player. I still don't know. Again, you brought up a great comparison with Marvin Williams. I don't know if he's Marvin Williams or if he's going to be Vince Carter. And we'll just have to wait that out and see. But in the meantime, I'd like to welcome our next guest, Coach Samika Randall, former Tennessee Vol player, a member of the Meeks-era Lady Vol teams, current coach at Ohio University with the women's team there. Coach Randall, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. And yourself?
I'm doing great. And again, I'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. You're on with the Real Sports Guys. Listeners out there, hit us up at realsportsguys.com. Coach, can you give us kind of a brief overview of how your season went this year at the University of Ohio?
Well, one thing I want to say, taking this job was in a rebuilding process. So finishing it up, I saw a lot of progress within our team. Obviously, it wasn't on the win column. I felt like we left maybe 4 or 5 games out there on the floor. So we overall ended up with a 14-18 record, and we ended up advancing to the second round of our tournament for the second straight year in a row. We had some keynote wins against Bowling Green, which is our big rival, and I believe, if memory serves me, is maybe – They say over a decade we beat them at home, so that was pretty, you know, unique and cool for our kids. And then going out to Vegas to play in a tournament, we ended up beating Xavier, who had had in the past a phenomenal career in terms of making it to the NCAA tournament. So we had some peaks, some really high moments, and I think the best is yet to come for our basketball team. And that's just, you know, talking about a few things that I thought we did as a program.
Now, when you're talking about the program that you're building with the Bobcats at the University of Ohio University, what kind of style of play can fans and people expect to see with your team?
Well, what they started to see in the past couple of years is the fact that we are a team that likes to press and get after it to speed the tempo up. Just games, you see the teams that are fun are the ones that like to push the ball up the floor and try to create easy opportunities. I try to paint a picture with our kids and say, we want to shoot as many layups as we possibly can. So that means we got to really emphasize about on makes and miss, really getting that ball out and players running their lanes hard. So that's the style, and that's less thinking for kids. So they kind of really buy into that. But for the most part, we have to start it on the defensive end, and you know, obviously I was a defensive player at Tennessee, so we've done some pretty amazing things in really all 4 years of me being here with that, of holding teams to below their shooting average, to basically rebounding, doing all those fun things, contesting on the three-point line, making people shoot a low percentage. So we've been able to do some really good things off of that, and that creates offense for us.
Now, Coach, you're selling yourself short a little bit. You say you're a defensive player, all right? You're selling yourself short a little bit. Anybody with the nickname Hard to Handle Randall was a heck of a defensive player, all right? What do you look for in recruits, given that that's your orientation to the game and that's the approach you take and that's your philosophy, that's the basis of how you build your teams? What kind of kids are you looking for as a coach? Who are you looking for as a recruit?
Well, I think when you're building, you're always looking for toughness. I think every coach in America is trying to find that tough kid that's resilient, that can push through things. I guess I might have this ego. I feel like I could teach anybody how to play defense if they're willing to do it. It's just understanding the system and being able to follow it and commit to it, because our defense is about a team defense. It's not just individually one player just being an exceptional defender. We want to do it in a team thing where we have our rotations, and you know, it's important that we box out. So we spend a lot of time on emphasizing those things to create toughness within our team.
So, Coach Randall, you were a part of a Final Four run yourself. Can you let our listeners? What's that? Yeah, absolutely.
Quite a few
with the Lady Vols. You guys were running the show back in your day. In the late 90s out there at the University of Tennessee. Can you share with the listeners what it's like to prepare yourself as a player, and then give us the perspective of what you know, how your coaches went about their business and things that you learned from watching your coaching staff, and how you try and use those experiences of your coaching staff as they prepare their players for a Final Four run?
Well, I have to just kind of key you in on just the 98 team, and that just being a special, unique team, and you don't get an opportunity to see that often, and you're probably witnessing right now with Baylor, and it's been with UConn. There's been very few teams that have been able to do that undefeated type thing. So with that particular team in mind, we had such an air of confidence and composure and toughness, everything that coaches look for in players. We felt like every time we stepped on that court, we were going to win a basketball game. And one of the unique things and beautiful things about it, it wasn't about winning by 1 point. It was trying to annihilate people and do whatever we could. It wasn't really trying to run a score up, but if that's what it meant, we were gonna do that. So everyone had that connect. Tamika, to Shamiqua, to Kelly Jolly, myself, and the rest of our teammates, we literally, it was like a dogfight. You put me in there for 5 seconds, I'm going to give you everything I got. If you leave me in there for 30 minutes, I'm gonna let you know that, you know, the Lady Vols are in the house and we're ready to play and compete on both ends of the floor. It wasn't just about being a specialty player and say, hey, all I can do is shoot threes. No, you were going to be able to defend. You were going to be able to rebound. You were going to box somebody out. You were going to set the best screen. You just had that mentality. And now I will say, as the years went along, my junior year, it was about experience because we've been there before. And when you be a part of tradition, you kind of know how to hold yourself. You don't get wild by the whole experience of walking into the gym and being overwhelmed by the blue carpet where all the media rows are set out. You just know you're supposed to be there and you're supposed to get it done. So it's just a different approach when you're a part of tradition where, if you're a 16 seed or 15 seed, you're just happy to be there. Tennessee expected to be there.
Absolutely. From now, you're on with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, with former Tennessee All-American Lady Vol, Samika Randall, former WNBA player, joining us right now, and current coach of the Ohio University Bobcats women's team. Now, Coach, you talked about being a part of the Lady Vol family. How has that family continued to develop with Coach Summit going through the things that she's going through? How have you been? How have you guys? I know it's a close knit community of former players and coaches and people who've been involved with the Lady Vol program. Can you talk about that a little bit and how everybody's rallying around Coach Summit right now?
Well, from the family perspective of all the former players to players that were the support staff that was close to our the Lady Vol just basketball team, we've all stepped up where it's been phone calls, and it's not so much all just been out to Pat. Obviously, we made those calls, and we've done all we can do in terms of, I know individual players have taken time out to fly in to visit her and just, you know, sit with her and just talk to her and just let her know that we're supporting and we care and we love her. But it's been support to the assistant coaches that people like Holly and Mickey DeMoss, who've been there for a very, very long time, just to tell them thank you for just having Pat's back. And that goes along with the support staff, too, because a lot of those people have been there so long and they've dedicated so much to building the program up and to make it a very prominent and special place to be. So everybody just trying to carry it away, whether it's a phone call here to swinging by practice to just talk to the student athletes that are there, or to a phone call to an assistant coach just to keep encouraging them that and let them know that, you know, we're standing behind them 100%. And if there's anything that we can do from our end, that we'll be more glad, you know, gladly to help out and make that happen. Our family is so thick, and we, as former players, we talk a lot, and this is going to be fun for us heading to the Final Four. We always try to do our annual get together, and it's about 30 or 40 of us that are in coaching. So I'm quite sure it's something to be mentioned about, you know, what are we going to do for Coach, and we'll get it done like we usually do.
So again, Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. I'm here with Coach Samika Randall of the Ohio University. I'm gonna get killed next time I'm in Ohio. Don't kill me, Coach.
I don't know if I can have you back on that. I'm usually about having you back.
You ain't got to have my back on that. I don't want you to have my back on that one. You gotta hold down yours. That's my mistake. I own that one. Ohio University Bobcats. The Ohio University Bobcats. I'm here with Coach Samika Randall. Now, Coach Randall, we're at the point where the Final Four for the women's tournament is pretty much set. We have one more game to be played. Notre Dame and Maryland are doing battle right now. We got Baylor, Stanford, and UConn awaiting. Can you talk about the women's Final Four right now and the women's tournament experience in general? You know, all one seed so far. Notre Dame's up by a considerable margin right now. It looks like they're holding it down against Maryland. Maryland may fight their way back into it. That's a really tough team. But can you talk to me a little bit about the women's tournament and how it plays out and and the state of women's basketball as a whole right now?
Sure. Well, I'll just say on all those teams, with the exception of UConn not having what in people's mind have an exceptional player on their team, and they're doing it collectively as a team, but the Baylor to Stanford and possibly potentially Notre Dame, they really have a what we call stud player on their roster, and they're really it's starting with them, and not to take away anything from the other players. The other players are feeding off of them and doing everything they got to make this a remarkable special season for them in terms of winning the title. One thing I want to say is, from history serves me correct here, if all the number one seeds do pan out, it'll be the first time since 1986 that all one seeds have had an opportunity to get there. So just a little known fact there. I think that'll be different, but I mean, when you go start breaking teams down, Baylor, and you what Griner has done. In fact, she did Tennessee pretty bad the other night, just in terms of what she's doing. And you look at her stats of 199 block shots. She's on in the paint, and she's doing it on both ends of the floor. So it's just going to be special to see that matchup between Baylor and Stanford, because they got two special, and I'm going to put both of the sisters in the category. I know the oldest sister is doing everything right now, but that's going to be a very interesting matchup. So I look forward to just seeing how that plays out. And a lot of teams have played Baylor in such a zone, and Stanford's mainly a man-to-man team. So I'll be interested to see how what the scouting report is going to be against that. And then over on UConn, I mean, UConn's been there and done it. So, obviously they're doing it by committee, but they know how to get it done and win. And as we're talking now, Notre Dame's winning by 20, so I'm predicting they'll be in as long as they can hold out in the second half. This will be the fourth time that UConn and Notre Dame has played, so it'll be interesting. It's always tough. Just recall our opportunity, my junior year where we played UConn three times that year. That's tough to play somebody, and to play them four times, it's going to be a really interesting matchup. And Notre Dame's up on the series 3-1. Or excuse me, 2-1.
Now, you talked about Brittany Griner. You talked about the Aguma case. And then you have the loads of talent that Geno has at UConn. And then you have a player like Skylar Diggins. Now, you have some individual players with Skylar and Brittany who are kind of becoming one name type people. You know, when you talk about LeBron and Kobe.
Names, as we call them.
Exactly. And Maya, you know, they're kind of getting to that level and really beginning to raise the profile of women's basketball even more so. One thing I want to touch base on is the parity in the game. Do you see the parity of the women's game increasing more, where now you can see mid-major teams being able to compete in the same way they do on the men's side, on the women's side?
Absolutely. You've seen that with Gonzaga as they've made their run, and they graduated one unbelievable player in their point guard to St. Bonaventure making it all the way to the Sweet 16. There are different teams, and it gives a lot of mid-majors hope that they can get that opportunity too. So I think it's great for the game. And, you know, I'm at Ohio University, you know, you can sell that. Why don't you come here and put a program on the map and make a difference? And I tell you, our men being in the NCAA run and going, and Gross doing a fantastic job, it's made our players, because a couple of them had an opportunity to go down there and see that stage, to want to make feel like they want to get there. So us, you know, rebuilding this thing and our kids getting to visually see that, I think it's just a promising thing for a mid-major team to be able to play on that stage. It's a phenomenal experience, and I don't think I could tell you how it really feels as player. I know as coach, you know, our job is to prepare, but for these kids, it's a dream come true.
Now, Coach, we have a couple more minutes with you. I want to throw out one more quick question before we let you go. Again, you're on with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. Now, Coach, we got you started to talk about it a little bit. Your men's team made a run in the men's tournament. Can you give us your insight on what's going on with the men's tourney? I know you're in Ohio, and that's real close to Kentucky. And I know right now in Kentucky, there's going to be blood flowing. You know, the blood feud is going in Kentucky, and there's a lot at stake. So the stakes are even higher than they usually are in a really, really heated rivalry. So why don't you give me your perspective on the men's tournament?
My perspective on it, I think you got four great teams in the tournament. One, four great coaches who've been doing this a long time, putting their teams in great positions just to make things fun for everybody who's watching the game. Just the method with Kentucky and Louisville, oh, my God, the battle to figure out who, and they played each other before, but this is like, this is bragging rights. This is all about recruiting rights, and it's just so tough to say who's going to win that game because watching Kentucky, I mean, gosh, they're really good. And I don't want to take anything from Louisville because I've watched them throughout the course of the season. I just think Patino has gotten that team to play, and it's getting better every time you watch them. So the progress in them have been tremendous. And on that stage, you're just hoping for a very good game in terms of up and down the court to the half-court action right there. So that's going to be very interesting in that field. And then Ohio State, you can't pass up Ohio State, you know, since I'm only an hour and a half up the road against Kansas. It'll be great to watch them, what Sellinger does, and then all the Kentucky guys. But I think one of the interesting things that I just noticed in all these, the benches are short. So it'll be real interesting to make sure the foul trouble doesn't present an issue with them because it'll be certain players have to step up. And I think that's going to be key, which bench is going to step up and provide a spark.
Well, again, Coach, thank you so much for joining us today. I coach high school girls basketball, so to be able to talk to not only a current D1 college coach, but also to be able to talk to a legend, and I mean that, to be able to talk to one of the Meeks, and I have a daughter who's a ninth grader, and to be able to tell her, you know, she wants dearly to go to Tennessee, and we'll see if we can make that happen for her. But,
why gotta be Tennessee? You just said give a shout-out to all the men makers who it might not be Tennessee.
Hey, if it's not, then we'll come look you up, Coach.
Come on.
We'll come look you up, but that's what she's shooting for. That's what she wants to be a Lady Vol. She's always wanted to be a Lady Vol. So we'll see if we can make that happen. But if that can't, she could be a Bobcat. All right?
Okay.
She could be a Bobcat. I wouldn't mind that. So I appreciate you and all you're doing to continue to advance the women's game and continue to build your program. I thank you for joining us, and we would love to have you back. Anytime you're always welcome. We always tell our guests that you are now a part of the Real Sports Guys family. So, you know, we welcome you in and you're always welcome to come back. So thank you again for joining us tonight.
I feel honored. Thank you. You have a good evening.
All right, you take care.
All right.
Again, that was Coach Samika Randall of Ohio University, coach of the women's Bobcats team. She's really building something out there, you know. See, when you have a coach who has a defensive mindset, it's really easy for them to come in and have success right away. And I think, you know, she has a young team, a young roster there right now. She's doing a great job of recruiting some kids that fit her style. She's getting players in that can play the way she wants them to play and play that intense defense that she believes in. And I think, you know, in a couple of years, that's going to be a program that we're going to hear about making some noise in the NCAA tournament. You know, getting to Sweet 16, she's building it. You know, hopefully they can keep her there because I think, you know, if she builds it the way she wants to build it, they're not going to have her there too long. She's going to get a bigger job, and she's going to keep moving up in the coaching ranks. So, again, thanks to Coach Samika Randall for joining us. Devon, what did you think of Samika and the Ohio University program?
She got so much swag, man. She's got so much swag. She got that Vol swag. And to me, that's it. I mean, people gravitate towards that. And she's in a unique place being at Ohio University because she can, you know, she can dip up in that Detroit area where there's been some great players coming out of Detroit. You know, she's not that far from Chicago. You know, she got the whole Ohio. So she can – however she wants to play this with that pedigree, again, that ability to know what winning looks like and to be able to sell that to young people is important. And as you said, the game is changing. I mean, I was just on the phone with my sister, and, you know, my niece is, you know, a top player in her age group coming out of Georgia, and going to be playing in Ohio in a few weeks in the AAU tournament. You know, the whole movement around women's basketball and what's happening is changing. And then to have – there's a generation of players, you know, particularly in the 90s until now, when the game really made this major shift, who are now coming into coaching ranks and adding that piece to their ability to recruit. And because of the proliferation of women's basketball on television and people growing up, like you say, and your daughter growing up, watching these players and watching this brand, and now these players are now coaches in a way that happened for men's basketball in the 80s as television became more, you know, widely branded and distributed, you know, in terms of distributing, you know, games beyond watching, you know, DePaul on WGN, who had all the market, right? And then ESPN came and it exploded it. So it's just she has that, and I love it. And I love her approach and that attacking style. And I think, again, like the men's game, the style is very important to young people. And knowing that she knows how to communicate her philosophy, you know, I'm excited. I'm sorry about that, man. But I just – all I could feel is that I love it when you come with that. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. And you hit on some good points about the women's game evolving. We were talking about this in our pre-show prep, just about where the game is and, you know, the kind of athletes we're seeing. A Brittany Griner, who, when we were talking, I kind of likened her to a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the men's side, a Luau Sender. She's really taking the level of size and athleticism and raising the bar for big players in women's basketball. And then we had that conversation, and this morning I wake up, and there's another young lady dunking the basketball, Brianna Stewart, who's going to UConn next year. She's in the McDonald's All-American Dunk Contest, catching alley-oops. And so the level of athleticism is changing. The skill has always been there, in my opinion. But I think with the increased athleticism that you're seeing, you're going to see a different brand of basketball and women's basketball. And I think it's going to be fun to watch as it continues to evolve and it continues to grow and develop over time. That blew me away. Just watching it. I mean, she caught a one-handed hoop, and I was just like, wow. You know, we watching Brittany dunk, and, you know, she, first of all, you know, with the two-hand dunk that Brittany Griner had, she's out of it ahead of a break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm watching, like, how did she beat y'all down the court? You know, but that's the athleticism that she has, and then to throw the ball down. You know, we're seeing more and more women dunking, and more women are growing up wanting to dunk and working to become dunkers. It's only a matter of time before we got sisters windmilling.
Well, yeah. It's gone. I mean, I was just having a conversation, and my sister was saying that when they have a girl that's like, she's pushing up on 6'2", and all the other girls are saying, dunk it, and she's getting up there. I mean, this is young. So, I mean, again, the game is transforming how people are doing it, but the incredible play. I mean, I was watching, even though Texas A&M lost to Maryland, I mean, the skill and the ability early in that game, the way Texas A&M was loaded up from outside and inside game, I mean, the balance. And, you know, when you really watch the game play, you know, for those folks who really love to watch the game, there's some great players and great play. I love watching the women's game. I love the sweat. And so just, you know, here Coach Randall, I could almost see her team again, the way you could tell, like, yeah, we got it. She wants to let you know about the squad going undefeated. I mean, it was, you know, that stuff I can't get enough of. And to me, that's that charisma is what is important in being a coach. That's what draws these young players to you. So I'm looking forward to having more conversations like this.
Yeah. Now, as we talk about the impact of coaching, I want to transition a little bit and just touch base. We're going to revisit this topic later on in the show. Again, you listen to The Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, RSG, RealSportsGuys.com. Check us out there. Check us out on Facebook as well. As we transition, you talk about coaching and the importance of coaching. The New Orleans Saints just got elbowed in the throat with some heavy, heavy penalties for the bounty program that they had running. Greg Williams, he's no longer coaching with the Saints, but he's barred from football indefinitely, which is an unprecedented ban. And then you have Sean Payton, who's been suspended for a year. Talk about – give me your perspective on how you think that's going to affect the Saints' upcoming season, and what are some things that you think the Saints can do to try and mitigate those circumstances in the meantime?
Well, I mean, one of the things – I know the conversation, I don't know where it is now, but, you know, in terms of having conversation with Bill Parcells and whether or not, you know, he might take over because, you know, he understands the philosophy that, you know, Coach Payton is utilizing his approach and is, you know, very interested in you know, finding something he can do that and allowing his coordinators to really just focus on managing practice in the games. And so, you know, that's one approach that they could probably, you know, have to it to kind of help it go on. But I mean, it's a very difficult situation, but it sounds like they're trying to find ways. They basically have planned their schedule out to the preseason. You have a veteran quarterback, and so I think that could help with it. But it's going to, you know, to say it's going to be a challenge, you know. But the Parcells thing is interesting because you get somebody who has presence for the next 10 months, might be that the whole thing's together. And he has some great assistant coaches, great coordinators. So that might be enough to rally folks and keep it going. I mean, the other thing we don't know is which players are going to be gone. Vilma could be one that is gone, but there could be other players, and we don't know which shoe is going to drop on that one.
Yeah, there are quite a few levels to this whole situation. I think it's going to really hurt them. They're in a really tough division, a really tight division. When you're looking at Atlanta and Carolina is going to be on the upswing, especially, man, you give Cam a full season of OTAs, a full training camp, and they get to actually put some weapons in place that are going to really accentuate his talents. And you got to watch out for the Carolina Panthers as a sleeper team there. Tampa is still a year removed from going 11-5. Or 10-6, or whatever they went, where they were a fringe playoff team. So there's a lot of talent there, and they're going to be getting more talent. Raheem Morris seemed, unfortunately, to have lost that team last year, but that's a really tough division, and to be without your head guy, because if you pull in an assistant coach, you're weakening another area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to make another area that much more weak, and so. You know, hopefully they can bring in Parcells. You know, if they can, I think that'll be excellent. If they can't, you know, I think they're going to be between a rock and a hard place if they can, as to how they go about piecemealing together a coaching staff, because you got to have a guy in charge. You
yes.
know, you would think they would be able to work things out without that. But I really have a hard time thinking that that's going to work. Brees can handle the on-the-field stuff, but it's the running practices. It's the infrastructure of it all.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the only thing holding Parcells back, I think, and the reports are, is the, you know, the impact that it might have on the Hall of Fame. And I would hope that they would give him an exemption on that, given the special circumstances. So I think that's something that is going to be very important.
Yes, yes. So the Saints, they got hit hard, and we don't know how this is going to go or how it's going to turn out. We're going to transition into our next interview, and a couple weeks ago we had a conversation with this particular coach, Coach Prior Orser, about our Wilt and Mike conversation, or who was the best player when we did our top 50 NBA players. And so this is what Coach Pryor Orser had to say. We're going to give you a preview of kind of his perspective and his view on the whole situation. So take a listen for a moment.
Coach, we recently put together our top NBA players of all time, our top 50, and we had a split with Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. Who would you consider to be the greatest NBA player of all time?
For me, I would have another person because I look at the best players, who's played on the best teams, and who's won the most championships. Now, we all know that there's been individual guys, you know, like Wilt, or they score the most points, or they've done it. But who's been the best player that made the best players, that made the best players around them, that who won the most championships? And there's no question who that was, and that's Russell, Bill Russell. He, in my opinion, because he played defense, he played offense, his rebounding, his shot blocking, and then he was a great leader. I mean, he was a coach. He was, I mean, in today's world, who would be a player coach on a basketball team in the NBA? Could you name one that could coach their team? He did that. I mean, the magnitude of what he accomplished and with his leadership ability is just amazing to me. And to do it what he did. No, he had some great players around him, but he made those players better. And that's just my personal opinion on what he did. You know, and I know what happens when these kinds of questions come up. You know, we're in the now, and so people kind of forget about it. In 20 years, everybody probably will think, you know, the current players, maybe it would be LeBron or somebody, and they kind of forget about, you know, the great player Michael Jordan was, except for, you know, with the clips and things. But, you know, obviously, you know, what Russell did was just amazing in how many championships he won and how he made people better and his leadership qualities and all of that. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, that was Coach Pryor Orser, who is a coach of the Colorado School of the Mines. He is the 2011-2012 Basketball Times NCAA Division II Coach of the Year. His team is ranked number one. Coach, welcome to the Real Sports Guys. How are you doing, Coach? Coach Orser, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, really good.
Welcome to Real Sports Guys. So you have Bill Russell.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I mean, obviously you kind of hit me with that question. And, you know, and I still feel that way because, I mean, if you look at Russell, you know, who's the greatest player? Well, I think there's no – he's the greatest champion that's ever played basketball. Two NCAA Division I championships, one Olympic gold medal, 11 NBA championships, nine in a row, and two of those where he was the head coach. I mean, and it's just amazing what he did, and especially for those times in the 1960s to be appointed a head coach, and to have the intelligence and the ability to lead a team as well as playing. It's just amazing to me. That concept that you can coach your own team and win an NBA championship is just, and he did it against the Lakers when he was a head coach. And, I mean, I just think he's the greatest champion ever to play basketball. And, I mean, with his stats and numbers, I mean, can you see a player averaging 25 rebounds a game in the NBA Finals or averaging, like, 24 rebounds a game through an entire season and doing it year after year? Or averaging 24 rebounds a game for an entire career with one team? That's just amazing. That's an amazing stat. And the unselfishness and all of those things that you have to do to be that kind of player, and he's just an amazing champion to me.
Well, you know, and what's great about it, I think you said a great point. We talked about this when we were talking about the top 10 players, and we were talking about Bill Russell, that his ability to control a game without necessarily scoring, and that there's a value to that. And so I thought that was a great point that you raised. Regarding that.
Yeah, and there's a value. And the thing was, because, you know, he had other players around him, but I think if you would have asked him in that time, hey, Bill, we need you to score 25 or 30 a game, he could have done it.
I think you hit it right on. He probably could have done it. He decided to really focus on defense a little bit more.
He focused on defense, and he accepted that what he did as a champion, said, this is my role on my team, and this is what I can do to get my team to win championships.
That's right.
And there's
not
a lot of guys that can do that. And
that's
what he decided to do.
Well, Coach, you've had an amazing year. I mean, with the, you know, obviously being recognized for being the Coach of the Year, and I want you to talk about that. And, you know, last time we talked, you were getting ready for Metro State, and you had that tough loss at home to them.
Right.
But can you talk a little bit about your season? And, I mean, your first time being ranked number one in the country.
Yeah.
Just kind of summarize what that experience was for you.
Well, first of all, it was a great ride. I mean, we just had a great time. And now it's, you know, I think the smoke is cleared and, you know, you really feel good about what you've accomplished. And obviously when you're in your season, you're just trying to win that next game to play one more game. But what we accomplished with my players and for my seniors, I'm so proud of them and what they did and putting Colorado School of Mines on the map, obviously from a basketball standpoint. And, it was just an amazing run. And obviously they have built a legacy and, their leadership and everything, hopefully it'll continue in the future, you know, with the Colorado School of Mines basketball program. And then obviously I think I said it last time, we had to play Metro State. You know, their history is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it's a rivalry game. So throw it out. Throw out the NCAA tournament. It's a rivalry game. We had beaten them twice. And to beat a really good team three times, that's really, really hard to do. And, you know, usually they're the one. They were number one in the nation, you know, 2 months before that when we beat them. And they came into our place and, you know, we upset them. Then we went to their place and won. Mm-hmm. And then they got upset and didn't go to the conference tournament. We did. So they rested. They got ready to go, ready to play. It didn't hurt their seeding. They were still a number two seed. After they had gotten beat on that Tuesday game before the RMAC tournament, we won. We went and won it. And so we played more games. And, you know, what they did is they recharged, refocused, changed a few things, and got ready to play. And you know what? They were awesome. They played terrific. They made shots. They made bank shots. They made bank threes at the end of the clock. It seems like everything they threw up went in. And, you know, at that time of year, when you're in the NCAA tournament, whether it's Division II or Division I, There is a component, and that component is luck. You have to have a little luck sometimes on your side, and they had it. And it just wasn't our night. And we had shots that we normally make, we didn't make. And then we had some young guys kind of, you know, we got a little you know, we got frozen in time there a couple times. But again, they made the plays. They were quicker than we were. They made some adjustments that really helped the game that actually changed the game for us. And you know, we're usually the one doing that. But I thought they just did a great job. Their coaches did a great job preparing them for that game. And you know, they shot over 50% against us. They out rebounded us. Not many teams out rebound us. Not many teams, you know, outshoot us on the percentage basis. And they did both. And basically, they deserved to win the game.
Well, they had a player, and I was even in preparation for our last conversation, Reggie Evans. Who,
oh, yeah, great player.
They have a picture of him, you know, prior as I was preparing for our previous interview, just over the rim. He's an incredible looking athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
And can you talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of impact he has in the game?
Well, you know, actually, I mean, he's not just one of them. I mean, Reggie is great. He's a great athlete.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's a high flyer. And you know, he made shots. And what he did that game is he moved the ball better, and he got the other guys open shots. He actually moved the ball better. And Jefferson and, you know, and Miller, those are the guys that really hurt us. But he, you know, obviously the matchup with him and Brett Green are going against each other. It's a war.
Yeah.
It is a battle. And, you know, obviously Reggie, you know, he's a great rebounder, and he really hurt us on the boards as well, obviously the offensive boards. But, you know, he's one of the best players in Division II, no question about it. He can play a lot of places.
Yeah, he looked like he could play. You know, they go on and lose to Montevallo, and who face Western Washington in the championship game. Can you talk a little about those two teams in the championship and kind of tell us about the Division II championship?
Yeah, obviously, you know, those teams are obviously good, and you know, when we saw that, we were, you know, we thought we could have played with any of those teams, but you know, that's just how it is. And you know, Metro, they had the lead a lot in their game, and they're Montevallo, they're good and they're well coached and they have good athletes, and the ball just didn't bounce Metro's way, you know, at the end of that game. And so then they win the next night, go on the championship game. I'm familiar with Western Washington. I used to play in that league. I've played those teams up there a couple times. What he does is he gets really, really good basketball players. And they run a simple system. They switch screens. It's difficult playing against them. Your shots come at different angles and different spaces on the floor because of their switching defense. And then you have to really guard them because they have major, major skilled players at every position. And they're just a tough matchup. And I thought that they had the best basketball players in terms of 1 through 5. And their switching defense is bothersome. They're a team that doesn't run a lot of stuff. They just play basketball and run motion, and that's their system. He's a longtime coach there, highly successful. And, I've seen several teams, his teams there, that I thought could win a national championship, but the ball just didn't bounce his way a few times. And it did this year.
Well, you're on with the Real Sports Guys. We're on with Pryor Orser, head coach of the Colorado School of Mines, Coach of the Year, Division II. Coach, when you think about before I move this over to Phil T, Coach, when you think about kind of the types of players, you just talked about Evans being this kind of player that can play anywhere. When people think about Division II players versus Division I players, I mean, I think sometimes people don't realize that you're playing against some athletes who could, in the right circumstances, play at the next at a different level. Can you talk a little bit different
right.
what you might see in a Division II player versus some of the Division I athletes we'll talk about
right. a little bit? Well, oftentimes in Division II, you'll see players. There's a couple different types, and one you'll see players that maybe have dropped down. Maybe they'd signed Division I, or they went Division I, and it just wasn't the right situation for them. And so, they can drop down and play right away at the Division II level, and you'll see that a lot with successful Division II teams. Or maybe you'll see a kid go junior college and maybe not have the grades or whatever to go, and oftentimes the requirements are a little easier to get in Division II schools. And where they, because if you go to junior college, you have to have your AA degree to go Division I, and you don't. You just have to have 48 transferable credits that are acceptable to that school in Division II. So sometimes you get those kind of players there that aren't as motivated as academically, but there might be a Division I level player, and so they'll end up Division II. Now, the other player, like you'll see with Western Washington, you'll see those guys are like, the Division I guys will look at them, maybe they're not that athletic enough to play Division I, because Division I has the best athletes. There's no question about it. I mean, we all us D2 guys, we know that. But then those guys are borderline guys, and they're like, well, Western Washington, I look at that school. It's close to home. They have 17,000 students. It's a great place to live. It's a great place to go to school. They have a great environment there. And so they go there, and maybe they don't get that Division I offer that's acceptable to them. And then you end up with tweener guys, guys that can score, maybe guys that aren't that – exceptional athletic ability, but are sneaky athletic, kind of like my guys I have, and they're just great basketball players. And you put a collection of those guys on one team, and then they share the ball and move the ball and play the way Western does or play the way we do, then you can have some real good teams.
Coach, this is Phil stepping in. I'm going to name a few players here, and I bet our listeners won't know what they all have in common, but I'm sure you will. Darrell Armstrong, Manute Bol, Mario Elie, Charles Oakley, Jerome Kersey, Rick Mahorn, and Ben Wallace. These were all excellent Division II players.
Right, exactly.
Can you think of any players right now that you've seen play this year that may be able to make that jump to the NBA at the Division II level?
I don't know that I've seen those level of players in Division II, this year. And, obviously, all those players are special, special players. And, I haven't seen those type of players this year. But who knows? They may be out there. I mean, obviously, I'm not an NBA scout. I haven't seen, a lot of teams. But, I know there's one really, really good player at Bemidji State. And, he's really, really, really good. So, but obviously, those kind of guys, they need a break, too. They need someone to see and say, hey, this guy can play, and and they get in a situation where they can, where they're given an opportunity, and that's the biggest thing. There's a lot of really good players, and some players don't get that opportunity, but those players, the Oakleys and the Daryl Armstrongs, those guys got an opportunity. Someone saw them and gave an opportunity, and I think that's the main thing. They were presented an opportunity and then took advantage of it.
Coach, you know, as we begin to prepare for the Final Four weekend this week, when you think about breaking out a game, we've been talking a lot about the Civil War that's going to happen between Louisville and Kentucky.
Right, right.
And just the great matchups, Kansas and Ohio State with the bigs.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, as you break down the Final Four games, break that down and give us a sense of where you think things are going to unfold.
Okay. You know, here's when I look at those teams, and I've watched those teams, all four are outstanding defensive teams. They all give up around 60 points a game, some a few points more, some a few points less. They all give up around 38% defensive field goal percentage. I mean, they're all they all out-rebound their opponents. I mean, they all have such winning stats. They all shoot far more free throws than their opponents. And they're all pretty even in a lot of areas. And, I mean, they're just four really, really good teams, really, really good defensive teams, really, really good defensive rebounding teams. And, you know, their shooting percentages are similar. Their free throw shooting percentages are similar. And, I mean, obviously, Kentucky obviously has a little more advantage with their stat numbers in certain areas like block shots. I mean, their block shots is off the charts, 326 blocks. That's just amazing. And, I mean, in one guy gets 175 blocks, Davis gets 175. I mean, that is just off the charts. That's just unbelievable to have those kind of shot block numbers. And, you know, I mean, if you're coaching college, you're happy with a guy that has 40. And, I mean, Kentucky has one guy with 175 and another guy with over 60. I mean, that's just unbelievable. And they have several other guys that can block shots as well. So I just think the matchups, like with Louisville and Kentucky, it's a great matchup. Because they're both very, very good defensive teams. Louisville scores 68 a game. They give up 60. Kentucky scores 77 a game, which is, obviously I think they have a little better offensive firepower. But Kentucky only gives up 61 as well. Kentucky shoots 48%, and their opponents only shoot 37%. Louisville, they shoot, which is low, 42%. That's why they score 68 a game, but they only give up 38%. So, you know, I think in the end, I like Kentucky there because they have more weapons. They have six guys in double figures. They have more weapons, and obviously they shoot a ton of free throws. And if you look at their stats from their first game, they shot way more free throws than Louisville when they beat Louisville the first time. And I think that stat will continue because Louisville has guys. They have players. They can get to the rim more. Louisville shoots more threes, and if you shoot more threes, they don't get to the, their standing shots. They're not going to – you're not going to the line shooting threes unless you're getting fouled on those jump shots. And so then the other thing I think is Kentucky, they got all the shot blocking, so Louisville is going to be forced to make jump shots and make threes, and Kentucky has big wings, they're athletic, and I just think they just got too much firepower, and they can stop Louisville's three-point game.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with head coach Pryor Orser, Basketball Times NCAA Division II Coach of the Year. Coach, before I go to Marcus for a question, you talked a lot about. I mean, you hit. If you were to think about a player that's going to have a one shining moment, I love that song at the end. It makes it reflect. In some ways, I'm a little sad because that represents the end of college basketball, and I love college basketball.
But yes.
If you're thinking about one person who might have a shining moment, who do you think that person is that's going to step up?
Well, obviously, I think Davis is because he is the number one lottery pick, no question about it. I think he's going to step up, and because he is a multidimensional, he can shoot the ball. He can do a lot of things. I just like him a lot. I think he's a big time player, and he's a good kid. And I think he can dominate a game, and I think that's what he's going to do. Now, on the flip side of it, if you turn the page and look at the other game. Ohio State, Kansas, there's two really, really good players that I think can really step up. Ohio State, very similar opponents as well. And, I mean, that is going to be a great, great game. Their numbers, their stats, almost similar in every category. And but there's two players. Sullinger, I think, is an outstanding player. And then the other one is Kansas's power forward. Help me out with this.
Robinson.
Oh, yeah, Robinson. He is. He's outstanding. I mean, 6'9", 240. He's a better athlete than Sullinger, but Sullinger's a little more polished around the glass. And I just think that those two players and Davis are my guys that can step up and have monster games. And if those guys do that, you know, any of those three teams can be successful and possibly walk out a champion.
Now, Coach, this is Marcus of Game Changer. How you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you?
A quick question. If you're getting prepared and you're the coach and you're Coach Cal, you're Coach Patino, you're Coach your Coach Mata, or your Coach
mm-hmm.
Self, how are you getting your guys ready? This is a big-time environment, a lot of pressure, a lot of distractions. How are you getting your guys prepared for this coming week?
Well, first of all, I think that the distraction piece, I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, there's going to be family. There's going to be a lot of people around. There's going to be a lot of friends and things that are going, a lot of students going to the game. The biggest thing is staying focused and not being distracted and, you know, conserving your energies for the basketball games and not maybe listening to TV as much and listening to people and all that stuff. I just think you got to go in and play the game and play the type of game that you've played all year long. At this time of the year, you know, there's not a lot that you can change. And you have to stay with your systems. You got to stay with what you're doing. It's not a lot of times you can maybe put a wrinkle here and a wrinkle there, maybe a set or something to maybe take advantage of a mismatch or something like that. But for the most part, guys are going to have to go play basketball and make plays and make shots. And I just think that's what you stress the most. And play your game. Play the way we've been playing all year. Don't do anything differently. And then don't get caught up in the hype. You know, because we're on national TV, because it's a huge, huge game, there's a lot of media coverage, you still need to play the way we've played all year. You don't want to get too selfish. You know, like with stars, you know, the great players want to shoot the ball maybe the first time. They have to play within their system. And the teams that do that usually are going to want to be successful.
Well, Coach, we certainly enjoyed having you on and loved the breakdown that you've done of not only Division II and the Division I championship, but also what you provided us in terms of, you know, for those basketball junkies who really love history.
Yeah.
Right. Your reflection on Bill Russell. You know, we want to welcome you. You're part of the RSC family, so we'd love to have you come back.
Sure,
join
anytime.
Us for the time, and thank you for being with us, and have
right.
a great evening.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
All right, take care. That was head coach Pryor Orser, Basketball Times Division II Coach of the Year. He is a head coach at Colorado School of Mines. Incredible. I mean, if you think of it, he's an engaging person, and what's great about having someone like Coach Orser on is that you understand the great teachers that are out there in the game and the great coaches that are out there at multiple levels. You know, the Game Changer, myself, Phil T, we have the privilege of going to small colleges and having that experience. And you realize that the type of folks we have working in these games and teaching and working with young people is incredibly vast. And he's just one more example of the talent that you have out there. Not only the talent that is existing at Division II, as Phil T talked about the history of that, but just the coaches and the talent that exist throughout the NCAA. So, Game Changer, you know, you're someone who's very familiar with Division II athletics and had a chance to hear Coach Orson. Just this entire kind of, I mean, he's versatile. He can talk about history. Division I. I mean, this is a guy that knows the game. What are your initial reactions to it?
Just hearing him talk about the difference between Division II guys and Division I guys, I think sometimes the general perception is that there's a larger gap between D1 guys and D2 guys. And for a lot of these Division II tournament teams, the top two or three guys on their roster could play at most mid-majors and some high majors in the country. At a D1 level. For whatever reasons, whether it be academics coming out of high school, maybe they weren't prepared as students, or maybe, you know, they were at a D1 or they were at the, like he was talking about, bad fit, those kind of things. In the men's game, there's a ton of talented players, and that talent has trickled all the way down through the levels where you have guys at all different levels who can play the game. They may not necessarily have the size to athleticism ratio that you need to match up with the certain skills that they got, where you got, you know, at D2 you got 6'5", 6'6", guys playing center or power forward, but still playing at a very high level and have a wide range of skills, but they just don't have the size to be able to do the things that they can do at the D2 level that they can do at the D1 level. So that was really one thing that I just really grabbed onto, was how he talked about that there isn't that much of a separation. A lot of it is opportunity. A lot of it is, you know, circumstance as to where players end up. But as we all know, game recognized game and players.
That's
play.
Right. That's right.
So, you know, whether you're D2 or D1, if you can hoop, you'll find your way to where you need to be. You know, if you got the right mind frame and you got the right focus and you got the right work ethic, it'll all work out. I would like to see them grow their tournament more. I think it's a great way. You know, I had a younger brother who played D2 ball. Again, he was one of those kids who was at a D1 for football, got the itch to play basketball again, didn't want to sit out a year. So he went down and played Division II. That was what he needed. That worked out for him. They played in 3 Final Fours. And, you know, it was always great to see them on, to be able to watch his games on national TV and see him on national TV and have, you know, D-Wills, a PhD, hit me
that's
up
right.
with the X. Hey, your brother's on. You know,
that's, right.
that's always. I wish they would get more coverage. They would find a venue where they can highlight teams more. I think the first couple of teams that do figure that out at the D2 level are going to see themselves, you know, really begin to make a name for themselves. Trying to find some creative ways to promote, and different conferences have different formats, whether it be broadcasting games over the net. But trying to find some new ways of promoting the game and getting the D2, these D2 universities, their brands out there as far as their basketball programs, I think also would be a major get or a major boom for the Division II game.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I also think, you know, in wrapping up our conversation with Pryor Orser and what we looked at in terms of what he's been able to do. I mean, I also thought he broke down in Division I Final Four. I mean, he was hitting it. He had it locked down. What were your reactions to some of his comments he in terms of talking about the Final Four this weekend?
Oh yeah, man, he was spot on. You know, that Kansas Ohio State matchup is going to be a dog fight. I mean,
yeah.
That's an overused term, but I really have no other way to put it. I'm really excited to see Robinson and Sullinger go against each other. Kraft and Taylor is going to be a great matchup. You know, who's going to shut down William Buford? Right now, I think Ohio State has more weapons. Ohio State is a squad mm-hmm. that is just kind of good enough. Like, mm-hmm. they don't wow you. They don't overly impress you with any one particular thing that they do. They just kind of slow walk you and win games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just kind of, you know, before you know it, you're down 6, 7. You fight back, and then you're down another 6 or 7. And you just can't quite get over that hump with them. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's it. I mean, I didn't pick them to go very far in my bracket because I just didn't know what to make of them. I mean, they're good, but I don't know if they're that good. They don't seem like a team that's ever that good. They just seem like they're good enough right now. But good,
mm-hmm.
they're good. They're good.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas, I think Thomas Robinson is one of the best basketball players in the country, college basketball players in the country. If I were drafting, I'd take Anthony Davis first, and then Thomas Robinson would be coming off the board second. The kid can play. I think he's a gamer. I think he has the mentality you need. He may not set the world on fire ever at the pro level, but I think he's going to be one of those guys who's going to be a solid pro. His floor is much closer to his ceiling, and that's the kind of guy that you want to get. A solid guy. He's not a huge upside guy, but it's a guy that you definitely want to have available to you, and who's going to be a contributor on good teams for a long time.
Well, I think that this has been a great run for NCAA coaches. Phil, I know you're back. I don't know if you want a chance to summarize this before we move back to the game changer to close us out.
I think it's been a great show for college basketball, starting off with Coach Lewis Preston at Kennesaw State. I mean, we saw we've had such an action-packed show, we almost forget that he was on the show, you know, because, you know, it's just been so action-packed, and that was an hour and a half ago, but Coach Preston came on, and, you know, he was spot on with how he's building his program down there. Listeners, I'm telling you, a year or two from now, this is going to be a program that's going to be in the NCAA, making major moves, and we're going to see Coach Preston, you know, be recognized as one of the hottest coaches in the country. Then we had Coach Tamika Randall from Ohio U come on the radio, and, you know, you can see why she's starting to pull in some excellent recruits. We didn't mention on the air, but she just landed the Player of the Year in the state of Ohio in the Columbus area, and that's a huge, huge get for her. So you're going to see big things coming out of that program, just like the men's program. And Coach Orser, you know, Coach Orser at the Colorado School of Mines, you know, they had, Devon's already mentioned this, but they have one of the toughest application to acceptance rates in the country. But yet he's doing what he's doing there, having one of the top programs. And these are kids that can easily play in the Ivy League, but they're choosing to play for him and get that great engineering education there at Colorado School of Mines. So it's just been a bang-up show. I'm fired up for it. Like Devon mentioned, that one shining moment statement, you know, we hear that song. Like, we're going to hear that song a week from yesterday, and that's going to be it for college basketball for a few months. So I'm just savoring it. I'm savoring this show, and I'm savoring the great college basketball coming up in the next couple of days.
So, as we begin to transition into our off-the-dome segment, we're going to go about 5 or 6 minutes here. Just kind of, we got one real heavy topic that we got to touch base on, or if we're not doing our duty as real sports guys. Now, we got Ray hanging out with us right now. Ray, you in the house?
I'm in the house.
All right. We had to call in reinforcement, folks. We had to call in the reinforcements because we really got to break this down. So we had to bring Ray in. We got Ray in, and you know what we got to talk about? Tebow. and a marriage made in hell. The New York Jets, one of the most dysfunctional sports programs in the world, going up against and getting married to Timothy Tebow. Now I'm gonna throw this to Ray. Ray, what's up?
What a question to have for such a long absence. You know, it, you look at it and you just realize how wrong the New York Jets have been for, you know, for a couple of years now. And you just shake your head and you wonder where some of these decisions come from. I mean, why are they bringing Tebow in? Are they done with Sanchez? Are they? What does this tell you, you know, about where they think they're going? You know, did they bring him in to play quarterback, or is Rex Ryan looking for some loopholes to get into heaven? You know, after all these feet pictures, you know, you don't know why they would do it. You know, I mean, it really sends a message to your football team that there's a mad scramble, and it's a truly dysfunctional family. I don't know how Tebow could be happy about going, you know, to New York. You know, I realize, you know, his opportunity to play, you know, it's probably enhanced because, you know, he doesn't have to play behind Peyton Manning, he doesn't have to stay in Denver and go through that. But he started to build a little home there, and now all of a sudden, you know, you got to go in and take directive from Rex, you know. And that's not I just don't see how that fits, you know.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from Rex. I mean, he has his own following, and he could have his own type of players, but I just, you know, every time Rex says something, I just picture Tebow, you know. So, you know, he's trying to keep everybody everybody from going to hell, you know. Here, just hold my hand, you know. Don't listen to Ray. Just hold my hand. Just take a moment, you know.
Now, I want PhD to touch base on this and give us his perspective on the whole Tebow situation. And after PhD goes, we're going to get into the resistance district dog of the week.
Well, I tell you what, fellas, it just felt uncomfortable. Everything about it felt uncomfortable. You know, essential personnel, they're not there at the press conference. The owner's not there. You know, the owner says, we just signed a backup quarterback for a fourth-round pick. What's the big deal? Come on, man, as Chris Carter would say. Come on, man. And, you know, Sanchez coming out, well, you know, he's not here to replace or take anybody's spot. You know, he's adding to the process. Man, come on now. I don't know if they have you reading from a cue card or what. But I tell you what, man, you you know, you have one of those games that you had the first game of the season last year, and they're going to be calling for Tebow. They're going to be calling for Tebow. So snap into it. You know, I think that the Jets have just, like, they have opened Pandora's box. They have taken this problem. John Elway is probably like, thank goodness, you know. And we all thought Jacksonville was going to be a player, but yet the Jets snapped in. Now, one of the things I do want to point out is when I first heard that the Jets picked up Tebow, it kind of made sense because all last year they were looking for that element that Brad Smith gave them the year before. You know, Brad Smith signed a free agent deal to go to Buffalo last year, so he wasn't with the Jets. But the guy that they can bring in and kind of do that slash stuff, run the Wildcat, but he also has some special team stuff. But I don't think Tebow will be able to bring as much as what Brad Smith did, but I think he'll be able to help a little bit at that void that Brad Smith left.
Excellent. Hey, you know what, fellas? You know, I'm glad nobody went there and started.
Listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Practice. I'm glad nobody went there and started talking about Tebow in practice, man. We didn't go there, so that's a good sign. All right, so we're going to get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, fellas. Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. It goes down about this time every week. D. Wills, you know what I got to say to you, brother?
We need more dogs.
I'm going to tell you, my dog of the week has got to be – I'm going to give him the dog of the week for the next 3 weeks is John Elway. After watching that press conference, the only person I was thinking about it is Elway is just sleeping good tonight. He doesn't have to deal with it. He let it go. I think for the next 3 weeks, he might be my dog of the week every week because he's drinking and partying every night. Every time he watches a Tebow highlight, he's thinking himself. He's toasting somebody. He's toasting Bowen. He's toasting somebody. Elway will be my dog of the week for the next 3 weeks.
All right. PhD.
We need more dogs.
I'm going with Frank Martin, the former coach of Kansas State. Frank Martin smooth went on the set with Kenny and Chuck for the last 3 days and then just stepped out to South Carolina. And, he did a real slick. But I think it was a good move because South Carolina is on the come up, kind of like Vanderbilt. You see what Spurrier's done with the football team.
they're in a hotbed of talent in that North Carolina, South Carolina area. So watch out for Coach Martin in the next couple of years. I think he was smart getting out of Kansas. I mean, Kansas, the state of Kansas is a Jayhawk state. So in South Carolina, he's got the state to himself, and I think he's going to do a bang-up job recruiting.
Love it, man.
Ray.
We need more dogs.
I'm going to have to say my dog of the week is Mark Sanchez, you know, because when they ask him, you know, about the whole Tebow situation, you know, he came out and said, you know, actually both he and Tebow said that they both could coexist in New York. And I'm thinking, you know, what else can you say when your team goes out and brings this kind of headache? I feel sorry for the man. He just, you know, he's been bitten by the dog. is how I'm going to describe that tonight. Mike Sanchez has been bitten by the dog. You know, your team ain't got a whole lot of confidence in you when they think, well, you know, in case something goes wrong, we got Tebow.
Hey, my biggest complaint with the whole Tebow situation is, can they get Mark Sanchez something other than, was Mark Sanchez talking on a two-way? I mean, is it 2002?
I don't know.
Was he doing his interviews on a two-way pager? I mean, they do have cell phones, you know what I'm saying? He could have got an iPhone or something. Can they hook him up with an iPhone or something? He got to do his interviews on a two-way pager, man.
It's an indictment on the entire Jets organization.
This yes, right, sir, it is.
Yeah, it's an indictment.
All right, so we got one more.
We need more dogs.
So my dog of the week is the one Blake Griffin. You know, earlier in the week, Blake Griffin took a shot. Jason Smith. Jason Smith thought he was playing for the Saints. Wrong sport, Cat Daddy. Same time, wrong sport. And he just kind of went in and took Blake Griffin out. The Hornets played the Clippers last night, and Blake was on a mission, man. He went and got him some revenge. So he needs to do that a little bit more often. I wish LeBron would do it every now and then. But just go out there and take a pound of flesh for the beating that he gets. You know, people just don't want to get dunked on. People want to keep him out of lane. But Blake's got to start getting after people. You know, he's got to start getting after people. So another great show as we start to finish up. That's our theme music right there. The theme music for the shutdown. We're going to go into shutdown mode. I'm going to toss it to PhD. PhD, what guests do we have lined up for next week? PhD?
So next week we keep it in-house. It's going to be the fellas in the booth. We got some football coaches lined up for the following weeks. We'll unleash those next week. Then also we have Cecil Youngblood coming on April 10th. Coach Youngblood coached at the college level, played a bit in the NFL, wrote a book by the name of Training Camp. It's on our website at realsportsguys.com. So we all know Coach personally, so we're looking forward to having him on. That's what we got coming up.
All right. So be on the lookout for that. Also hit us up on the Facebook page. Hit us up on Twitter. At Real Sports Guys. Check us out on our website, www.realsportsguys.com. Feel free to interact with us. We want to interact with you. Catch up with your team, RSG Renegade Radio. D Wills, what you shutting down this week?
Hey, I just want to let everybody know tomorrow night we got Inside the Park, RSG, you know, with RJ, Hank, and Mike. They do an incredible job. Make sure you tune in 8:30 Central. 9:30 Eastern. We're doing this real big. Hope y'all enjoying it. Let us know.
Baseball season is kicking off. Make sure you check that out. It's going to be real big. RSG, Renegade Radio, closing out this week. We're going to do an after-hour session. So for you downloaders, stay tuned. We're going to get into some interesting topics, talk about some football, talk about the NBA playoffs coming up. RSG, out.
Yeah, obviously you've played in the NFL, you're familiar, you played football, you played on both sides of the ball. Provide us with your perspective on this issue.
You know, and I caught the last tail bit of what you guys were talking about, but I do agree with what you said. When it comes to a person's livelihood, when it comes to physically hurt somebody intentionally, I can't agree with that, but interception, big play, something like that. It's an incentive amongst teams. Like you said, you got stickers in high school as in junior high in the playground. You got the girls' attention. I mean, you got to make plays and football. Football's a brutal sport. It's a barbarian sport. I mean, when I ran the ball, my job, I wanted to punish you. And if that meant, you know, you're getting a headache, something happening to you, you're getting hurt, that's part of what my job, my running style was. Now, I wouldn't want anything to happen after the 60 minutes and on the street, but within the lines, you know, you got to go out and be that warrior. So it's hard to separate the two, but if you're going to intentionally hurt somebody, I can't agree with that.
Now, you played on some good teams. Did you have that folks who on the defense or whatever that had those kind of competitive things they put with each other? Was that things that on offense you knew folks talking about?
I mean, yeah, even like as kids. I mean, who's the first person to go down on a kickoff? Who's the first person to touch the ball carrier? Whatever it was back then, it might have been you get a donut. You know what I'm saying? But as a kid, you could instill it. That's part of the game, is to go and we highlight the most physical, the most dangerous, the most meanest competitor. We highlight that. So
that's
now
right.
That it's brought to light, it's like, oh, how could they? But you glorify the big hits, and you glorify all this, and you want to see that. So, I mean, I don't recommend, and I'm not with intentionally going to hurt somebody. But it's like tell Michael Jordan you can't dunk all game because you're too good.
Got it.
You know, I mean, that's just he'll go and he'll dunk every play if possible, but you can't do that. So that's how I look at it.
So that was T.J. Duckett, former NFL player, former Michigan State Spartan. He was on our show a couple of weeks ago, and that was his take on the bounty system and how it's something that evolves over time, and players become accustomed to being rewarded in some way, shape, or form for a certain level of ferocity on the playing field, on the football playing field. Now let's get into this bounty situation a little bit more. Again, we got the square in effect, right? We got all four of us here. Let's talk about this whole bounty thing. I wasn't here the week when TJ was on, and we really got a chance to get into it. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with folks, and some folks, you know, have been kind of wishy-washy on how they felt about the bounty system. Like, why is it a big deal? For me, I feel like it's a tremendous deal. One, player safety is at the forefront of everything that the NFL is trying to do, and for them to not come down hard on the Saints would be a bit hypocritical, in my opinion. Also, to me, it's just unethical. You may have a lot of things that coaches do and players do to motivate themselves, and you never want to motivate yourself by hurting another guy. If the only way I can beat you is by hurting you, then the competitor in me doesn't feel good about that. If the only way I can win this game is to hurt you, I'm gonna play hard. And if you happen to get hurt, you happen to get hurt. But I just don't like the idea of intentionally going out to hurt my opponent as a way of winning a contest against someone. It's already a violent enough sport, and you really don't need to add another level of violence to it. You know, if I'm a tackler and You know, I might get a couple thou if I knock Adrian Peterson out of the game. Instead of just hitting him in the thigh, I'm going for his knee. And to me, that's just a dirty thought, you know, to be taking out a guy's knee or going for a guy's head. You can end somebody's career really easy, you know, going taking a shot at the knees or twisting somebody's ankle up at the bottom of a pile. Those are the kind of things that I really can't condone, and that's why I have a problem with the bounty system. And I think the way the NFL came down on the Saints and Greg Williams, and again, we still have to see how they're going to discipline the players, but I think so far, to me, it's been very appropriate. And very just, given what the NFL is trying to stand for. It's been very consistent and congruent with what they're trying to stand for at this particular time.
Well, I mean, let me chime in on that. I mean, I think, you know, I think there's an important message to send. I think when anything, there's a slippery slope. I love when TJ talked about you got stickers for certain things. You get to a certain level in NFL, you don't get stickers. And, you know, this is the way that they do things. And obviously this went over the top. It was much about the denial as it was about the act. I think that, you know, the denial is what caused a lot of it, more so than the act. I think was important because of all the litigation that's happening, but I think the fact that they told you and you kept denying it and all these things, I think it just comes down. And yeah, it's about preserving the players. But I think there's a slippery slope, and sometimes in incidents like this, we create an opportunity to push it too far, and it still doesn't get to the idea that you can't legislate contact out of sport. So what we don't, what I'm not going to probably accept is this creates an opportunity for doing even further legislation than we already are doing about, you know, letting more offense, because the offense is really about money. It's not about, yes, it's about protecting people, but the reason why they a lot of these changes are also about more offense sells more tickets. You know, people love to talk about Aaron Rodgers, they love to talk about all these people, and so. You know, it's become even tougher for defensive players to play. And so sometimes this becomes a smokescreen for a whole bunch of other things that are going on.
See, I wouldn't even say I get you with the offense is money thing. But I wouldn't say offense sells tickets. Offense gets TV ratings. Because the Ravens sell out all the time.
And
the 49ers sell out all the time.
But the
bottom right, no, line I get that. I get
talking,
that.
People
I get
you're talking
that.
About,
yeah,
yeah, you're talking about the 49ers, but they're not. Nobody wants to see them in the Super Bowl. You and I love them, but you know what makes the 49ers and the Ravens are really the characters, not the play. You know, it's Jim Harbaugh makes that exciting, but it's not necessarily the style of play. The people that they want to see are the Bradys. They want to see, you know, the Rodgers, and those are the folks that folks really want to gear.
What if I'm big hit guy and I want to see big hits? I'm not gonna get that. I'm not gonna get that from a pansy defense.
But what I'm saying is that even when you control for some of that stuff, the ratings are still having its effect. I mean,
you're a Steelers fan. You're a Steelers fan, D. Wills.
What I'm telling you, that's what I'm saying. It hurts teams like the Steelers. You know, who's been the most penalized and fined? The Steelers. You think, I love that style of play. You know I love that. But that's not what the brand of the game is going to. I love the Steelers. I love the physical play. I love the scene of Bill Cowher, you know, talking about rush the quarterback. I love all of that. You know, that's me. I'm a defensive guy. But – you know, I think this becomes a smokescreen for all the little things, you know, in terms of little fines that people want to put on some of these defensive players who, you know, are getting fined. There are some getting fined for some big time hits, but there are some getting fined for hits that are just not hits that should be finable. You know, and so that's the part I worry about. This whole bounty gate is that it becomes a smokescreen for further legislation.
Well, to me, also looking at it from the league's perspective, and again, I'm usually highly critical of Goodell. You can check the tape. My track record speaks for itself. But I'm usually highly critical of Roger Goodell. But on this, again, on this one, I think he got it right. And this is what I say. Because former players are bringing suits against the league because they felt they weren't protected enough. And so if you're the league and you got players trying to hurt each other, that hurts those former players' case, in my opinion, because it's like, wait a minute. You guys are suing us saying we didn't protect you, and you guys are illegally going out and setting up systems where you're trying to kill each other for money, for additional money on top of your salary you're already getting. So,
Hold up. Now, I'm going along with all that, but all those players knew this stuff was going on. Now, everybody comes out and say, I'm astonished. Sometimes I just look at this player like, you expect me to believe that? You know, I've been around enough locker rooms. Players know that if it's a close knit community, and they travel to two different teams, so if it wasn't happening to your team, you knew this was happening in the league. You know, it kills me when these ex players come out like, "I'm surprised this happened." What are you talking about? Come on, man. I'm not even still lying, but that I watched that, I don't even believe it. I mean, you know how close knit these communities are. And for people to say, I didn't know this type of – now, to this level, maybe you didn't know. But the fact that people were putting money out and about first tackle, first hit, interception, big play – I mean, folks know this stuff is going on. So, folks, they kill me with that stuff. Now, I, for all the things you said, I think Goodell was right. But all these players, I don't care how far they were going back, they was putting money on that.
Yeah.
Some of the people were complaining – put on. Now, McMahon might not remember that happened, but he knows that there was some money put on at some point. He might not remember it because he got the recent memory problem. But you know the Bears were doing that. You know, you
oh,
Chicago
yeah.
Five. You know the you
oh,
know
yeah.
you know Wilbur Marshall and them was doing that. Singletary might have been the only guy because everybody's like, you know, Mike ain't gonna go for this. So they did it with Mike.
I don't know, man.
You know, Mike was
cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
Yeah, that's what Mike said when they came through. Hey, Mike, man, we got this bounty system. Mike looked at them all like.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
You think that's what Mike said to him?
Hey, we got Ray Ray in on this one. Ray, what's your opinion on the bounty stuff?
Well, it is what it is. If you would have found out, or if that bounty system would have been written in such a way that any of those hits had to come in, within the boundaries of fair play, meaning no whistles are blown, there's no late hits, none of that. What would be the difference if a running back said, you know, or if the coach said, look, I'm going to give any running back, you know, $100 for a 20-yard reception today. And he went out there and he got a 20-yard reception and got his $100. These were small, you know, monies comparative, to, you know, to these salaries. This is just like I said, you know, this is like a donut. If the boundaries would have been within the legal limits of the game, I don't think people should have a problem
Ray,
with it.
But
I
Ray,
just paid to hit.
If you're a coach, if I'm coaching, I'm not going to put an incentive out there unless I think it's going to have an impact on how my kids play.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
So to say it's the same as a running back, you know, getting a 20-yard run. That's something that happens in the floor of the game. That's a part of the game. But it doesn't involve injuring somebody. To me, that's where the line is crossed. Like if you say I give you this much for this many tackles or whatever, but when you're purposely putting in a guy's mind to try and injure somebody in a sport that's already violent, it's already violent enough.
This,
you don't need to add
any more violence to it.
This is
how I played, and you may not agree with it, but within the boundaries of the rules. If I'm on defense and you go down into a three-point stance and you come out of that stance to take a step, I can either point at you and ask the referee to throw the flag.
Because this is the other thing.
What do you
think I did? But this is the other thing. What if that cat with a chop blocked you? What if that cat with a chop? What if the bounties was on the other side? And O linemen
sure.
are trying to take out defensive players.
Sure. You don't think they did? You don't think they did?
No, I'm saying. To
I don't
me,
know,
to me,
I don't know if they
that
had
way,
a boundary.
Because if you're chop blocking or cut blocking people, I just don't like the idea of messing with cat's knees, man.
I agree that this, within the boundaries of the rules, you know, if it's my job to put a hit on somebody, I went out there to put a hit on somebody. That's what I was supposed to do.
See, you know what? If you drive your helmet through this cat's chest and you crack his sternum, then good for you. You know what I'm saying? You did what you were supposed to do. But when you pass up an opportunity to hit a cat square on and you take a shot at his kneecap, that's not okay.
See,
that's still illegal.
And I agree with that. I agree with that, Marcus. I do agree with that. But if we go shoulder to shoulder, face mask to face mask,
that's good
you
football.
Know, if I stand, exactly. If I stand him up and drive him back, you know, as long as it's within the game, I agree that you shouldn't try to take anybody's knees out. Nobody should try to take your knees out. And if that's what was happening, you know, they said that in that New Orleans and Minnesota game, Fire was asking, you know, what's going on, guys? He was getting hit after the ball, after the whistle was blown, after he had already thrown the pass. That's where they go back to New Orleans and go, that's why it was so wrong, because you weren't even trying to do it within the confines of the game. It was like you just turned it loose. You know, if you can make it look like it was part of the play, you know, that's a bonus. That's what made New Orleans wrong, was that there were so many instances when they were playing that it was obvious that all they were trying to do was hurt somebody.
And yeah, I want to pull PhD into this skirmish. And where you stand on the issue?
I think it's a perception management. It's a perception management issue. You brought up a great point, Marcus, earlier, where the league has to do everything to create this perception that they are interested in doing whatever they can do, the maximum effort to increase player safety because of these lawsuits and other liability that may be coming or may be potentially out there for information that we don't even know now that might be out 10 to 15 years from now. And, you know, I mentioned a few weeks ago somewhere Deacon Jones and Dick Butkus are looking at themselves like, I don't get it. What's the big deal? You know, because this is stuff that happened all the time back in the day when they were playing. Because, you know, I heard an interview with Vince Lombardi, and he mentioned it. You know, a lot of these guys had to have jobs in the offseason. So if you offered them an extra $100, that meant something. And so I think the NFL, it's a new day. There's new rules. There's new expectations, societal expectations and NFL expectations. And, again, it comes back to a perception management thing. You know, just like Devon said, you know, players know what's going on. They know what the deal is. But now you got to cover up your tracks.
And I think that the penalty that came down on Peyton was just simply the fact that he was the man in charge. This should not have happened on his watch. And, you know, he should have. And again, to just simply have a bounty that says, you know, if you take a guy out, you get X amount. If they get carried out, you get X amount. Without, you know, having a pretext of within the boundaries of the game, then you are wrong. And if anybody's trying to take somebody's knees out, you know, simply for $100, you know, you look at plays after plays in the NFL. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan. I didn't like when Sapp, you know, took Clifton out the way that he did. But you know what? That's exactly the way I played. Within the boundaries, you keep your head on a swivel. You better look out for me because I'm going to hit you. And I'm going to think it's funny when you stop playing or you stop on a play with the idea that I'm not. I'm going to knock you on your behind. I'm going to giggle at you while you're down. I'm not trying to hurt you, but I am trying to knock you on your behind within the boundaries of the game. I don't want a donut for it. I don't want $100. It's just the way I play. So at first I was mad at Warren, but then I giggled, you know. I felt sad that the man got hurt, but that's football. Keep your head on the swivel, keep your mind on the job, and you don't have to dust yourself off.
The bounty.
In all honesty, when you stop playing like that, you get hurt.
Well, I think when you look at, again, I agree with Marcus in terms of the right. I think the right decision was made in this instance. If you really want to put it to bed, a lot to talk about as we move forward into Bounty Gate. You know, as we get closer to the season. Game changer. One thing I want to hit on here before we close out the after hours is the whole Kobe and Mike Brown situation. What's your take on Kobe and Mike Brown and also some of the things we're hearing out in both sides of the arena, Clipperland. What's your take on that?
Well, first I'll touch on the Clipper situation because that's a real quick one. You raise your hand if you think Vinny Del Negro is a good coach. All right, I'm sure none of you guys raised your hand. All right? If you're trying to go somewhere for real, eventually Vinny's got to go. All right? You got to get rid of Vinny the Black. Vinny's got to go. You can't keep Vinny Del Negro around, man. He's just not – good ball player. Good ball player when he played, man. He had a nice game. His coaching skills, man, I don't know. You know, he's a holdover from the Dunleavy Baylor era. I think you got to let him go if you're trying to move forward. The Kobe Mike Brown situation, you know, that's Mike Brown coaching. He's got to coach his team. He's got to coach Kobe. He's got to earn Kobe's respect. And sometimes a way to do that is the same way you do with your children. It's like, look, you think I'm playing? All right, you're going to push that button one more time. And you're gonna get the other end of the stick, you know, and that's what I think he had to do. He had to pull him. He had to kind of just let Kobe know, look, I'm running the show. This is where this is going. I don't think it's a big deal. I think both of them are going to be able to work through it. You know, but I think he had to kind of put his foot down a little bit. And that's where they are, and it's what coaches do. Players get mad about it. I mean, anytime any of us has ever been pulled from a game, we didn't like it. We got over it. We moved on, and we kept balling.
Marcus, you know Kobe went up in the locker room and kissed him on both cheeks. Like a mafioso.
Nah, Kobe was hot about it. Kobe was mad about it. Kobe was upset. And that's the way he's supposed to be. You want him to be upset. That's why you do it. That's why you pull a kid from the game and send a message like, look, you want to play, I'm not going to let you play unless you play the way I want you to play, unless you're doing what I'm asking you to do. And that's what you do.
But
I mean, that's coaching.
I know it is. I know it is. We're talking Kobe Bryant and the Lakers. It's a kiss of death. It's a kiss of death. It's a kiss of death. Kobe might not say nothing today. He might not say nothing, you know, for the rest of the season. But if he wakes up in July and realizes I got benched, he's gonna be whispering in the ears.
And Mike Brown had to make a decision. Yeah, I'm gonna go out my way, and he had to make a decision.
Mike Brown might be swimming with the fishes.
He might be. But you know what? Mike Brown had to make a decision. I'm either going to coach this team while I'm here, or I'm going to let the inmates run the asylum.
Yeah,
I agree. I agree. And hopefully Kobe is mature enough to realize that, to understand that, and to allow for that to happen. But if there is any player in the NBA who could allow his ego to get in the way, it's Kobe Bryant. He goes smile at Mike Brown all year and talk through his teeth and go, your days are numbered. You know your days are numbered. I'm smiling for the camera, but I hope you didn't buy that house. I hope you rented. I don't know. I don't know of another player in the NBA who could just quietly, you know, and he doesn't even have to do it personally. He could just simply do it, you know, through a dignitary. He might whisper something in Buss's paperboy's ear. Kobe said, "Get rid of him." And Buss goes, nod his head and get rid of him. Because at the end of the day, Kobe sells tickets. That's what he does. So it all depends on how embarrassed he was and how he's going to take it as a man. I don't disagree that Brown had the authority to do it. But
yeah, and Kobe's got to work through that. But what I will say is that, you know, looking at that Laker team, I do feel like they're in a better spot having Sessions in the fold. You know, bringing him in, I think, upgraded that team a ton. They didn't have to give up Gasol, you know.
Right.
So I think right now what Brown has to do is accelerate that learning process and get everybody on the same page quick. And I think that's why he had such a harsh reaction with Kobe, why he sat him. I mean, he's trying to get everybody on the same page over the next couple of weeks. They just got a new player in who they think is going to help them out. They got to get the system in order. They got to get the house in order before the playoffs if they're going to make – because he's going to be out of there anyway. If the Lakers have a certain standard. And Brown knows if he don't win, he's good as gone.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that in terms of – you know, if Brown is going to do it his way, I like to say he's got to do it his way. At the end of the day, I mean, you only get a chance, coach, and I think he probably learned a slight lesson with how he handled LeBron. And so, you know, and it seems like they have the ability to have a conversation. They talk. So, but I think Brown had to make a decision, you know, quickly. That, you know, he got to do it his way. If it means he's going to be only here for one season, then do it your way. He can always go back to being a commentator. You don't get that many shots at doing it.
Right.
So you got to figure out how you're going to do it.
My thing is, if Kobe was able to, you know, in a sense, run Shaq out of town,
mm-hmm.
you know, he could run anybody out of town.
Yeah, but
we're,
I mean, Mike Brown,
the only one that has.
Yeah, but Mike Brown knew that coming in. Right, I mean, he knew
sure.
it was Kobe,
sure.
but that's not going to necessarily
sure.
lead to winning. If he knows it's only going to be one season, at least you know you're doing it your way. And it doesn't seem like I'm not going to blow that one out. It seems like they at least communicate, and Kobe's been supportive of Mike Brown.
And again, success, you know, let them have success with what they're doing. And I don't mean winning a championship or anything else. Let Mike Brown show Kobe that this was the right thing to do. And then everything could work out for the best. But
yeah.
If it doesn't work out like that, then like I say, and Kobe, he's not gonna go to the papers. He's not gonna go anywhere else. You know, Kobe's liable to whisper into the clerk at the grocery store. You know, us buying some Rolaids, and all of a sudden the gal reaches over and says, "Kobe said he had to go."
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to go. He's
going to
go.
Yeah. Let me recap the situation for folks out there that aren't aware real quick. Let me just step in real quick. So the two situations we talk about, the Clippers situation, the Clippers players, there's rumblings that they're unhappy or that Vinny Del Negro has lost that locker room. And, again, like I said earlier, to hear Vinny Del Negro lost the locker room, okay, that's what he does. He loses locker rooms, and it's about that time. That's one thing. The other situation is, late in the game the other night, Mike Brown sat Kobe out for the, I can't remember how much time it was, but he sat Kobe out. Kobe obviously wasn't happy about it, was asked about it. The media, of course, is latching on to the story and trying to give it some legs. You know, I think Ray is right on. It's a double-edged sword. You know, it may be, you know, Kobe could easily end all of this from Mike Brown and make him not have to make this decision anymore. Kobe's at that point with the franchise. He's at that point in his career where he can single-handedly kind of do those kind of things. But ultimately, whether or not, but also on the other end of it, Mike Brown's got a job to do. He's got to coach your team. And if you're coaching scared, you ain't coaching.
The one thing that you didn't mention is that Kobe has an opportunity right here to send a message to the media and to the rest of the team. You know, listen, Mike Brown can send me, he can send you too. So you either get on the same page or we're in trouble. You know, Kobe could further, you know, this whole thing by accepting. Hopefully Kobe went into the locker room and said, yeah, you're right. I should have been set. You know, I overstepped. And let everybody in the locker room know, you know, that if you want to have success, you better listen to the coach.
Yeah, I agree. It's a strange situation out there. L.A. is trying to make do. Hey, and again, you know, we all like being right, and I told you at the beginning of the season, it was about a 5 seed. You know, they managed to get up to a 3. I don't think they're going to stay there, but they've been playing like a 5 seed most of the season. You know, in the West, everybody's jumbled together, so they could slide down a couple spots after a 2-game losing streak. But, you know, it is what it is. I was right. Yeah, we were talking last night about some other predictions that people have made. Josh McRoberts. Some other things that have been thrown out there. We may have to revisit those predictions, man. Oh, man. So, it's about that time again. So, we're going to wrap this one up. Again, make sure you check us out next week. Renegade Radio, RSG, Real Sports Guys. Check in with us next week, 8:30 to 10:30. Next week we'll have, you know, the usual suspects. The guys will be holding it down. We're going to be doing what we do, laying it down, classic RSG style. We'll have the funky editorial back for you. We'll have Five on the Black Hand Side. You know, we'll have the Off the Dome segment. We're going to just run through the old school show, the classic RSG format. And we're going to bring it live. We're going to keep it tight, and we're going to have a great time. And we appreciate your patronage. We appreciate you joining us tonight. We had some great guests on. Coach Preston from Kennesaw State, Samika Randall from Ohio University. We also had Pryor Orser from Colorado School of Mines on with us. We thank all of them for joining us. We thank you for listening, and we hope you come in and check us out next week. Take care, be easy, and peace.